Hey there. We would like to begin this episode by thanking some people like Matt Donatelli, Robin Enrico, Casey Reetham, Carlo D'Aaron, and Skylar Evans. All of these are folks who have very kindly gone to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and contributed to the network. We can only make these shows like we do because of you. Once again, patreon.com/duckfeedtv to support this show and many others like it. Thank you. My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Dreamfall, The Longest Journey, which is an adventure game developed by Funcom and published by Aspyr for the PC and Xbox in 2006.
And Fun Company, Funcom, a portmanteau of Fun and Company, mm-hmm. is a very funny name.
I love it.
For a developer.
Yeah.
This episode was executive produced by Jonathan Yeh. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate you. And standard producer caveat.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't like this game very much. It does not reflect on Jonathan or
nope.
anybody who does.
Uh-huh.
You know, so just throwing that out there in the beginning before, this fortnight of slagging off begins.
Yeah. We're walking into a pretty rough fortnight between this and Crash Bandicoot 2. And I don't regret that we played this specifically.
Or Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That, you know, that's an important platformer. That's an important mm-hmm. game. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, can only be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Tis my curse.
Yeah.
I once sucked off a leprechaun, and this is what happened.
I ended up getting a very good job where I occasionally had to play games that I did not want to play at that moment.
Yep, and all it cost
that
me
was the curse.
Was an awkward moment with a leprechaun.
we're going to do like we always do, and you know we're going to say what we think about this, and we're going to back it up with what we feel. Mm-hmm. And you know, to a certain degree, and I'll put this out there at the front, my negative feelings about this come from disappointment, because I don't know, I The Longest Journey was fine. We played it 8.5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
I remember enjoying it, even though I thought it was a little bit too long. Fun, inventive world, good character, et cetera, et cetera. I walked into this really, really rooting for it, and it did not give me what I needed to continue doing.
There's also another layer to it where it's puts its best foot forward.
Yes.
Absolutely. Like this game to me was something that began
mm-hmm.
very strong, you know, or pretty strong.
Yeah.
You know, some problematic elements, but like, you had a lot of promise, and then bisects itself into this weird thing where it's doing multiple plots, only one of which I'm particularly interested in,
mm-hmm.
and then decides not to finish any of them. it's a real like, like this is made by the Joker
uh-huh.
and made to create Jokers. This is a recursive Joker game. Like if you're an adventure gamer, this creates adventure Jokers, you know, AKA the villain of Kyrandia, Malcolm. So you just get a lot of I just got a lot of like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Energy from this, and it was not you know, it's not super fun. And we're again, of course, we're gonna back it up because that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And there are joys to be found. This is not you know, our sloggiest death march ever.
No.
You know, I would put this in the bathtub draining pile of like Fahrenheit while being not as like quite reprehensible as that.
Yeah.
But having a similar arc in terms of enjoyment of like a strong opening and kind of compelling mysteries and then just like.
Yeah. You can just, there's just a distinct point where the wheels start coming off in kind of in a comic way.
The wheels come off and then they start giving me wheels they think I want and I don't want.
Right.
Like, this is also the Dark Souls 3 of adventure games in a weird way where like it is. I also, it's been 8.5 years since I played The Longest Journey.
Yeah.
I'm a similar place to you. I remember liking it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't remember a lot about it.
Right.
You know, cause you know, decades, long time.
Yes.
A lot of life happened in 8.5 years. But I remembered liking it. I remembered some things about it and this game, which is a kind of a late follow of that, is really like, hey, here are all your old favorites.
Yeah.
And the trick is it's whatever the reverse of a trick is, is that they don't give you your old favorites until they've immersed you and, or at least for me, immersed me and invested me in new favorites and then decide, actually, let's go spend some time with your old favorites. And it's like, wait, hold up. And then also that stuff sucks. Like did Arcadia didn't suck this bad.
No.
Before, right? Like it wasn't this boring.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's really boring to me.
Yeah.
Like everything with the callback stuff, all of it, I was bored out of my fucking mind.
Yes.
So rough stuff. Like that is the predominant emotion I had during this game, was being like, I am bored and I'm, my hands are moving a guy around. I'm listening to dialogue and stuff. Like,
And also like contrasting this with the first one, this is far less interested in being a video game, you know,
you
get a sense that Turnquest or his team really, really started walking down the road of like a David Cage. You know, whereas The Longest Journey had, you know, good puzzles from what I remember, or at least it had intricate puzzles that spanned a good amount of time and a good amount of space. No,
this is narrative focused and it just, the narrative is not as good. Mm-hmm. I think we'll get into it in detail.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, as this takes place 10 years after the events of The Longest Journey.
Mm-hmm.
In that game, you played a woman named April who learned that the universe was divided in two. There's a technological side called Stark and a magical side called Arcadia. And she resolved the balance between them, but ended up stuck in Arcadia.
Yes. And the sequel, or I guess the team referred to it kind of as a spiritual successor that took place in the same universe. Dreamfall primarily follows the story of this new protagonist from Stark, a good character that I like named Zoe Castillo, who kind of begins her adventure when her ex-boyfriend, who she still, you know, is friends with, goes missing. He's a journalist who was on the, who, you know, who kind of specialized in corporate whistleblowing and stuff like that. And he goes missing and Zoe kind of gets herself wrapped up in this conspiracy that relates to this divide between Stark and Arcadia and possibly a force that rests above those.
And to me, that was the plot that was interesting to me in this game.
Yes.
Like I was pretty in for all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Not always the mechanics around it, but the plot. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
However,
Zoe's a good character. Yeah,
I like Zoe too. Like looking at reviews and looking at, you know, people are talking about this. A lot of people don't like Zoe, and I think at some point near the end, Zoe does get a little like surge protagonist, where she becomes like an easy button that says one thing.
Yeah,
and you know, she just starts saying like, "I don't even know what I'm doing here." Like even after she purposely gets sent to the. Universe, people accost her and she's like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. I'm like, yeah, you fucking do. You took the magic nap. Like you did it on purpose. You know, like you can't just keep saying this.
Yeah.
But early on, like she's a really good character and she's involved in the most interesting plot. We bring back April Ryan and all of the life is sucked out of April Ryan now. I remember April Ryan being, you know, a little like more complicated than this.
Yes.
And now again, I go to sleep whenever she's on screen because the plot she's involved in is not very good. And then Kian got, he's the demon ruins of people. Like he did not get as much time as everyone else. You know, they are just like, we got a guy here. Does he have an arc? Well, no, we don't see it.
No, his
arc is somebody yells at him for a second and he turns into a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And Keon also represents one of the main ways that Arcadia has gotten less interesting, has gotten more boring just in the 10 years since the events of the main game. This evil empire from the east has invaded and started imposing order and, subjugating demi-humans and magic users and stuff like that. And so you end up with this just really bloodless sclerotic critique of the Iraq War.
Yeah, I don't. Paul in the Slack kept saying it was an Iraq War thing, and I could see it, but it's so confused.
I mean, Turnquist has said yeah. Oh yeah, we also wanted to work that in too.
And it has the big feeling of we also wanted to work that in too.
Right.
You know, like, lack of focus is a huge problem with this game. And the idea of this evil, they came in as saviors, but they ended up staying as an occupying force, fantasy racism, putting all the demi-humans in a place and stuff like that, and a resistance group against that is not a unworkable premise. Like, it's not very fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a little spoiler. That does not resolve or even close to resolve.
No.
In this, we don't find out anything really about that group, their goddess, their six empresses and stuff. It's just a plot that's setting up for the third game. And the weird thing about this is, I don't remember exactly from The Longest Journey, but I don't remember that game at all feeling like, hey, this is setting up to be, we're going to pay off most of our stuff in the next one. But this game has so much of that energy.
Yeah.
So even these things that are not only boring when you're in them, you don't get a resolution for them. We don't get enough information. There's not enough focus on them.
Yeah.
So it just ends up being boring and really unsatisfying. And maybe that resolves in chapters, but they did a really good or really bad job of making me want to play chapters.
I backed chapters. I've got it. it's here. The chapters Kickstarter was announced shortly after, at 6 months after we recorded that episode in 2011. And I was like, oh, neat. I remember liking The Longest Journey. I'll probably play Dreamfall between now and when this comes out. And then
Psyched on The Longest Journey.
Yeah.
You had $14 fresh in your bank account from our Audible sponsorship at the time.
$14. Jeez.
that's over 10 subscriptions.
Okay. Yes.
Just to be clear. That's the lifetime earnings as split between. But, I understand having a dream in your heart and a whistle in your throat and deciding to back that.
Yeah.
But boy, have I not wanted to play a game less than that right now.
I am not feeling it. And I've gone wiki diving on a lot of these too, just to kind of see okay, how does this resolve? Because there's so much that's left unanswered, and there's so much that is, pulled from the first game. But like you said, these are not necessarily old favorites. There is a major character in this who was in one scene in the longest journey. So, this is a very just kind of misguided, it really is playing fast and loose with and is exhibiting very little of an understanding of what is important to us as the player or us as the observer of the story.
That is a really good way to put it. There's huge energy of I've written a source book and I need to get all this out there.
Yes.
Bad DM energy.
Mm-hmm.
To this, DM is sitting there and narrating to you the backstory of the area you just went in, and you have no agency, and it has nothing to do with your goals or interests.
Yeah. Also, and I don't know if this irritated you as much as it did me, but as we're talking about kind of the lack of focus, and as we're talking about the way characters kind of go in and go out and don't necessarily get enough time to, to develop, the way this is plotted or the way that it's told is oops, all framing devices.
Yeah. Yeah. There is an awful lot of that.
Yeah.
Going on to me, this felt like, somebody's idea of cinematic. When you mentioned the David Cage, that's a really good point of comparison. The idea of swapping between these characters or doing these cutscenes of let's see what the villain's up.
Mm-hmm.
Up to now that are framed through eavesdrops or visions or things like that felt to me an idea of how to tell a story as influenced by other media.
Yeah.
In a way that felt naked and subtractive.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. And also it's pulling in just kind of an awful lot of just like revelations, let's say, not plot twists, but just reveals that are playing with like, oh, here's a trope about like the metaphysics or cosmology of a fantasy world. So let's just throw that in too. As well. I mean, just like, you know, we're doing an inventory kind of at the top here, and we're going to get to specifically where this stuff pops up, but it's just real. Yeah, it's messy.
Like, if you're somebody who likes characters standing around saying what the theme is about two thirds the way through the game,
yeah,
as stated on the developer's Wikipedia. So if you want to read a Wikipedia article with the creator saying it's really a game about faith, mm-hmm. and then sit down and play the game and have the character say it's about faith, mm-hmm. like 2 seconds after that, yeah. you can.
Yes.
In this. And I'm like, wait. Wait, it is, you know, like, it's just like, this is a mess. And not least of which, we've been harping on the narrative.
Yeah.
I think that if this had really good puzzles, good mechanics, it might go down yeah. a little smoother, but it does not.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, not a point and click adventure game. This is that weird middle child, Gabriel Knight 3, Grim Fandango. The entire genre is in a crisis and Telltale has to come save us.
Right.
Period of adventure games mm-hmm. where it is a 3D third-person game that looks like a shitty Two Worlds knockoff sometimes.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's all contextual options. You can sometimes do a couple puzzles, but because there's no real inventory or environment interaction, the puzzles are like from the magazine puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mostly contextual. And then there's a focus system where you can send out this, like, hunting, this, like, beam.
Yeah.
This intruder beam, this Resident Evil movie beam.
It's a little interaction wedge.
Yeah, yeah. You send out your soul wedge in order to see if you can look at something that's far away.
Yeah.
The game does not explain this very well.
No.
So,
additionally, if you're playing this on PC, for God's sake, play it with a controller.
Yep. I got two chapters in, forcing my way through the mouse controls, and they are amazing.
Yeah. 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 Man, I can't tell you how much is lost when you go, you know, when you go from just kind of like a standard adventure game kind of format where you have screens that are composed with information that is relevant to you. You know,
yep.
like each screen is its own kind of painting, it's its own little work of art with, like, you know, points of interest for you to look at. Replacing that with empty space. Yep. Not only adds an awful lot of back and forth, which is kind of the only move that this game has in terms of adding complexity to something, is, oh, we're just going to have you go back and forth quite a bit. You know, not only does that, it just makes it feel just empty and dead. And I'm thinking about other games in this era that got around that problem. Like, I don't know, Morrowind.
Yeah.
You know, just like, I just the city in this is just a bunch of big empty spaces with, like, maybe a dude standing out in the middle. It's kind of like an EverQuest city or something like that.
Yeah, it's that generation. Like, Morrowind yeah. is also very empty, but the emptiness felt like it was to a purpose.
Yeah.
And they did a lot with atmosphere.
Yes.
And this game is not very atmospheric. You know, we talk about clutter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like current gen clutter. The opposite side of that is this PS2, PS3 era empty hallway.
Yeah, the vacuum
kind of thing.
Yeah.
The, you know, the vacuum. Think about what was that? The time travel adventure game we did.
Oh yeah, Shadow of Destiny. I mean, that had a similar problem to this too. You know.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the similar problems, right? Mm. And then you can do this and have it be to a purpose, like Morrowind or like Demon Souls or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Kingsfield 4, like mm-hmm. those are empty-ish environments. They're not very cluttered, mm-hmm. but it's to a purpose. They do rounding with music and stuff, and it doesn't work in an adventure game
mm-hmm.
the same way. Like, this is so empty. There's so little defined.
Yeah.
Zoe can, or your character can interact with, like, a lot of stuff
right
there and get, like, little, you know, little chats.
Mm-hmm.
But they, first of all, they drop off the further you go into the game.
Yep.
Like, there are fewer things to comment on. But second, there's almost nothing that is visually interesting to make me want to comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of being like, this is a lived-in, cluttered world, here's an object
mm-hmm.
That April can look at, it's, here's the sign that says who lives here.
Yeah.
I can make Zoe say, oh, it's Mr. and Mrs. Mm-hmm. Beddington. You know, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so vapid and void and, like, just... a big empty hallway game. Mm-hmm.
And so like this, the shift to full 3D movement and exploration was treated as a virtue of its in and of itself without acknowledging that there is an awful lot of work that goes into, I don't know, justifying or using that decision. Like it opens up, like, you know, that does open up new possibilities, but this team was not at all equipped to actually address those. Right.
Well, the possibilities it opens are also purely subtractive. Well, like they add in some genre stuff that you can do now, would be that it's a 3D over the shoulder game, and they both absolutely suck the stars from the sky.
Yes. We'll talk about those. You
know, So, I mean, there's some minor inventory stuff you do in this where you can combine a couple of things. Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
There is a very, very simple conversation system. Mm-hmm. Again, feeling to me like a casualty of having everything voiced.
Yes.
You know, there's not very much intricacy to the conversations. Mm-hmm. Like all the complicated conversations you'll have will be in cutscene.
Yes.
All of the ones you can control or have any input over, a lot of times are literally you have two questions and you just choose the order you answer them in.
Right.
Or ask them in. Like you ask one and then you'll default ask the second one. Mm-hmm. So not a whole lot to that. The bigger additions to this, and they are subtractions, is combat and stealth.
Wow.
To this. And yeah, neither is acceptable in this.
Like, it shouldn't have gotten through QA.
It's amazing. Like it's not, you know, the worst thing. Like there are like abject suffering style games, like AVGN games that do both these things worse.
Yes.
I cannot for the life of me, like think of what they add to this story or this game. Like what is this? What was the intended feeling? Like, am I meant to feel like tense or adventuresome or triumphant or challenge or anything you might feel from either of these systems? If so, I did not get it.
All that I can think of is it was a little bit of like a like maybe this is something that came up in a pitch. It was like, oh, in regular adventure games, which we're definitely not making because those died and we could not get funding if this was just one of those. But in regular adventure games, there's only one way through, right? You have to know what to say or you have to give the right thing to the right person. What if you walked up to a guard and you could either bluff your way through, but if you picked the wrong option or you didn't have the item you wanted, it dumped you out to combat and you could resolve it that way? Or what if you got around it entirely by sneaking and you didn't have to do it? Like, I could see the pitch being made to make this like, you know, this is far more broad than any adventure game was by the introduction of these systems. And they said, cool, let's put in a placeholder. And the placeholder was not adequate and they forgot to take it out because they abandoned it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it feels like that, and it feels like it's in service to a little bit of a tone. Like, I don't know if how alone I am in this, but I detected like a lot of like kind of Star Wars feel to this. Like some of the musical cues and transition wipes and stuff.
Yeah.
Felt like it was trying to ape that kind of story, especially with like the Rebels in Arcadia. And that is a story that would contain combat.
Yes.
You know, as a thing. But this was just not the solution. And contained stealth. Like we contained action.
Yeah.
They just did some real half measures.
Yeah.
In implementing those. So combat's really simplistic. You generally fight one enemy at a time. You're auto locked on. You have a light attack, a heavy attack, and a block. And the way it works is that a heavy attack will get through a block, but takes longer to do.
Right.
And it is really hard to face an enemy. It is really common to have some like Masters of Terrace Kai shit where two characters are in fighter stance, like accidentally back to back or accidentally perpendicular, kind of like punching the air, like, you know, in a really, you know, bizarre way. And it's not the most difficult thing in the world. But every time I failed it, I was frustrated and it did not feel like my fault.
Right.
They introduced some heavy hitters who you fight who like two or three shot you. And it's like, man, what game am I playing? Like this sucks so bad. And it just, so that happens all the time. And then stealth, is also similarly like systems light and limited.
Right. It's pretty much just press this button to move very slowly. You know, that way nobody will hear you. And, you know, it's not even really like cover based or like sightline based. It's like, make sure that you're at this interaction point where your character can like press up against a thing in order to get cover.
If you're in a nook, you're safe. If you're not in a nook, you're not.
Right.
Time your nook.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And throw away your Kindle.
But it's just, you know, and they have you do it a lot. Like, you're going to be spending most of your time as Zoe, not most of your time, a lot of your time as Zoe doing this stealth around robots and stuff like that. It kind of feels like or at the very least, the different protagonists, you know, so Zoe is really stealth heavy. And then whenever Kian shows up, you can be sure that there's going to be
a sword fight.
There's going to be a sword fight against like two or three dudes, you know, who come at you sequentially. And that sequential kind of thing is kind of a broader problem with this. You know, adventure games broadly, they throw puzzles at you. You have multiple things you can be working on at a different time. With this, and with the presence of stealth and with the presence of combat, you're pretty much always given the one thing that you're trying to do, and you just have to find the thing that will get you to that. And then it'll reveal the next thing that you have to do. Like, there's no puzzle chain in this at all. It is, it is just like, what particular dance do I do to get the next plot pellet?
Yeah. Really linear.
Yeah.
You know, and that is also a consequence of how empty the world is. So there are not as many like attractive red herrings.
Yeah.
That are possible. Like, in terms of complexity, it's such a huge step back in terms of what you're doing. This leads into a problem with the puzzles as they were in this, where they suffer from something I associate most strongly with A Machine for Pigs, which is that a puzzle game where your locks and keys are too limited and close to each other to operate as a puzzle game. So because of, conservation of detail, if I'm in a room and there's a door and there's one other thing I can interact with, that's the thing I have to interact with to open the door.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a lock I need to pick and there's one guy in town I can talk to, he's going to give me the lock pick.
Yeah.
You know, there's this conservation of detail that comes from its emptiness that is like the dark side of streamlining.
Yeah.
You know, so every puzzle gets shunted down to a task. Like, there's no inventiveness. There's no eureka moment to any of this. You know, I did not experience one like, oh, I'm like, I figured out a puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, with the exception of some of the, like, the Puzzles Magazine puzzles for kids kind of things that are kind of fun, like the lock picking thing where you have to do the move the symbols around.
Yeah
I like that. I'd play an iPhone game of just that. As far as lock picking mini games, that's pretty up there. You know, not the one where you have to match the symbols. The spinny one.
No, yeah. The weird little combination lock one is the one you're talking about. Yeah.
I think that was pretty fun. But other than that, like, everything was way too simple to feel like a puzzle. And I did not get anything I would get out of a puzzle game, which is, you know, at least like part of what I get out of adventure games in general.
Yeah.
Intuitive leaps.
Yes. I need those intuitive leaps, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are gamer treats for me in this respect. I'm a big opening maw, and you have to toss gamer treats into my mouth. And this game refused to toss me treat one. You know?
Yeah. Let me talk about the aesthetics here. I'm positive that this, you know, would have looked amazing if I played it back in the day, you know, back in 2006. You know, it's colorful. Like, it pulls, you know, it does have, you know, decent enough looking, you know, character models and stuff like that, even though it's super creepy that only Zoe has eyes that move. Nobody else blinks or looks around, but she does.
It's Five Nights at Freddy's. It's Six Nights at Freddy's, the sequel.
The Longest Night at Freddy's.
Yeah.
Freddy Fall.
They're all automaton. Yeah, Freddy Fall. I remember when the Freddy Fall happened.
Geez. The voice acting is fine, you know, like, Zoe's got a good performance in her. Kian is really flat. I think April is not given enough, it is just not given enough to do.
The lines are not, like, the things coming out of the mouths are not good.
Yes.
This is a huge problem with Crow.
Yeah.
Who was enough of a highlight of the first game that we put him on the first, you know, official piece of Duckfeed merchandise, that poster that we made. We liked Crow.
Yeah.
And Crow is no longer funny. And part of it is the cinematic kind of nature of this. So rather than keeping a running commentary while you do adventure game stuff, the camera points to him so he can do color commentary and everyone waits for everyone to finish each other's sentences.
Yeah.
In a way that feels like unbearably stiff. And everything, you know, no interesting things come out of April Ryan's mouth in this.
No.
And no interesting things come out of Crow's mouth. And it's weird because those characters had a lot of charisma.
Yeah. And like, you know, there's a version of their arc in this too that could have them like going through human growth, but like April is just sad until she dies, and Crow is like, I guess I'll wisecrack here, and maybe I'll be a new sidekick for somebody, you know, to aid in a backtracking puzzle. Cool.
Yep, imprinting myself onto another woman.
Yeah.
And the characters are constantly telling us that arc.
Yes.
Like April goes to an Oracle figure and has her character arc explained to her.
Yep.
Like it is, as transparent as it could be. This is like the ultimate tell don't show.
Yeah.
In terms of character work and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you end up with the, you know, the Wikipedia of Tornquist talking about how it's about faith. And then the characters just saying it's about faith afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like it is, really ham handed.
Yeah.
And that stuff, no subtle themes.
Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know, the idea of somebody who was a hero who's not anymore, who doesn't feel like they have a purpose. That's a cool thing for a game to explore, but they just don't. They just kind of say it.
Yeah. Like I was expecting it to be a little bit of I don't love this game, but like a Metal Gear Solid 2 kind of thing.
Yeah.
A little bit
yeah.
where like you wanted this protagonist. But we're giving you a new protagonist, you know, going for different things. But the idea of passing on the mantle is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We spend so much time with April and so much time with her struggle.
Yeah.
The focus is so like by volume between the three characters is probably on Arcadia bullshit with his invading force.
Yeah.
And that ends up being a real problem if the story is supposed to be about this isn't her tale anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're passing the buck. Like you're no longer a protagonist is an interesting Grant Morrison-ass thing to do. This game doesn't do it.
Yeah. No, here it's mostly her talking with people about movements of supplies and, oh, I understand the emissary has sent an envoy, has sent a wine boy, to address
fucking ship with medical supplies and her weird Vulcan.
Yeah.
God, do I hate her weird Vulcan.
Like, April
Ahn. You know, like I was losing my mind at her. Like her crew is so annoying. I'm so glad that Bryn died. If he died, I can't remember if he did, but I hate Bryn so much.
It cuts away. It implies that he okay. died, but
he gets his, I'm sure he gets his own Dreamfall chapter. Bryn's tale origins, where him and Rebecca Chamber explore the Spencer compound. I cannot handle Bryn.
No.
Or the Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
I was so surprised how boring April shit was, and I'm like way into fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that like generally more than like tech sci-fi stuff, but the Zoe goes and sees Mojo in a garden.
Yeah.
From the X-Men, and I'm into Mojo. Uh-huh. We got so little fucking Mojo. Uh-huh. I was like, why is the villain of this Mojo? Why can't I get more Mojo? Mojo plot has dropped. Little Mojo.
Pray for Mojo. Pray for more Mojo.
Pray for more Mojo. Give me the X babies. Ragnar Tornquist, one of the best names in games, is the auteur behind this. He got Dreamfall funded in 2003 on the back of some text descriptions and concept art.
Yeah.
And, you know, the success of The Longest Journey.
Yeah.
You know, which is a really, really critically acclaimed game, even if that did not sell super well because it came out during a twilight of adventure games.
Yes. Funcom thought that they had something here with this. There were even like talks and plans to make an MMO set in this world. Kind of like, you know, this was the era when Funcom was starting to make their plays and bets in that kind of space.
The secret world.
Shit. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and as we kind of alluded to, they had this, you know, real high flying idea that this would be a game about an exploration of faith and the way that faith can be tested and, you know, either reinforced or lost. All of that is just said. And when we say that this game is not subtle or this game, you know, tells and doesn't show, one of the endings is a woman attending to a dying little girl named Faith and says, I will be with you until you're gone.
Yeah. And the character even at one point is going to say something about Faith and realizes she's talking to her and goes, well, it's just a matter of faith. Yeah. You know, and I, my eyes rolled so hard that I became the cover of Tim and Eric's bedtime stories, like that scary image of Tim and Eric. I it was horrible. Mm-hmm. I was just like, man. And also like that little, the story is about this little girl. Like, what the fuck? Why do we spend so much time on the occupying forest?
Framing like, device upon framing device upon framing device, and not in the good pathologic way.
Yeah, it's pretty astounding.
Yeah. No, and like, I don't know, that's probably a human thing worth telling. Like, a game can be about that, a story can be about faith. There's just very little human about this. It doesn't it doesn't necessarily have like good insights that are expressed well.
It's not a theme I resonate with, but even as somebody who does not resonate with that theme very much, I can recognize when it's done poorly.
Yeah.
And there's a weird problem with this, even when you look at outside of, you know, that theme is really stock standard. The here's spoiler. I don't think anyone should play this game. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to spoil it, even in this generalities. The idea of this conspiracy, like we use the orphan engine or whatever to create our science. You know, some little girl is being, some kid is being tortured because of our dark science. Is so generic at this point.
Yeah.
Like, remember in Fallout 3, like, the pit?
Yeah.
You know, the ending of the pit DLC? Like, it was, you know, that was good because it stood out in contrast to Fallout 3's, like, general lacking of anything of substance to do narratively.
Yeah.
But even then, that was a stock, you know, Utopia is powered by an orphan. You know, Orphan Souls is a very, like, it's Avenger, like, it became Avenger Brothers plot because it's so generic.
Yes.
You know, so it's like, the amount of like lack of twist on things in this, I know this, we would have moved on to themes and I'm back to the surface level,
no, but
I just got frustrated because you brought up that, you brought up that young girl Faith and just being like the occupying force, the tech conspiracy that is powered by an orphan. Like none of the things are fresh ideas in this. And even fresh in 2006.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where like the first game that had, you know, the magic technology world, also not the newest thing.
No. In the world. See The Talisman by Stephen King and Peter Straub. Right.
Yeah. See like a lot of things, you know, and even in video games, right? Like see like Thief.
Yes.
You know, see, so the, even that is not that original, but within that there were things that played on the tropes. So like the evil wizard who we meet in this game for a cameo, in that I remember that being a really fun, kind of genre aware exercise in the first game. There's no genre awareness in this.
Yeah.
So they engage in things like rebel force occupying, thing, you know, church militant, little, you know, evil machine powered by the misery of orphans, or at least like, you know, resulting in the misery of orphans, and do not interrogate or challenge or subvert those tropes in any way whatsoever. And that's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Because that is a way that you can get to those themes is by taking our expectations and subverting them.
Yeah.
And this plays all of our expectations straight and then tells us the themes.
Yeah.
Using text.
Yeah, there's just no there's they don't put any English on it.
Yeah. You know, I need less straight putts than this.
Yeah.
You know, in a general sense.
So
and we're just starting, baby. we got like 3 hours of this shit, man. Like buckle the fuck up. No time for size yet. Get a coffee. Do some calisthenics. Like we gotta do.
Save the size for after hour two. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, as we alluded to, this came out at a time that was not necessarily the best for adventure games. The collapse was kind of way back in the mist. So like Funcom, you know, said, hey, we're going to do this, but we're going to, you know, need to develop this simultaneously for console and PC. And also that desire to not just be an adventure game led to the addition of the stealth and combat. And even Funcom says like, yeah, that wasn't good. We didn't do a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is good that they, you know, that they're not like dying on this combat hill.
Yeah, yeah. But also if you knew it, you could have fixed it or not done it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, there's a similar DNA, like I think this is a bigger failure, but like there's a little bit of that a victim of straddling that PC console line that like Invisible War has as well.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely a thing of this era, I think.
A really horrible thing of this era.
Thief Deadly Shadows, for sure. Yeah.
Yep. You know, and even those, like the most common problem between the, like those games all have individual problems, even though like two of them I like and this one I don't.
Yeah.
Is that they all have that loading times. How many fucking like loading windows do you go through in this game?
A lot.
They're quick on PC. It happens like your adventure zone that you get to go do an adventure game stuff is like a hallway and a room if you're lucky before you go through another loading screen.
Yeah.
Like not only did that straddling the console PC thing mean that they had to add these like kind of action elements, you know, for Xbox baby gamers, but you know, their perspective, not mine, probably, you know, but they made everything technically a little worse and less cohesive.
Yeah.
You know, going through, the downtown area you go to, the second major area you go to, which is cool stuff happens in that. It's probably my favorite chapter in the game. But the whole idea of these city streets is ruined by one, the absolutely limited small scope of what you're allowed to explore, which is a console limitation, and how much that is broken up by just that longest journey load screen popping up. Like it eliminates flow completely.
Yes.
So this being developed for consoles, like big, you know, detriment.
Yeah. It's not the best thing about it. it's just it's a format problem. You know, and like the biggest selling point, even when they were taking this out and showing it, was like, oh, we've got this really good graphics engine. Look at these people. You know, this is going to be such a huge game. You know, this also, when it came out, you know, on PC, this was a game that was like, it'll come on one DVD or six CDs. Like, do you remember when that was a thing?
Yeah. I love it, man. I loved installing Gabriel Knight 2 on on tons of discs.
Yeah, but it's like I remember the CD version of this coming in a gigantic box. I was like, wow, six CDs, huh? Like,
yeah,
cool.
So it's like, the thing, it used to be really exciting because you thought like, oh, that's like tons of game, but really it just means like poorly optimized graphics and like,
yeah,
you know, poorly so compressed.
It's lots of FMVs. Images. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, so they showed like, hey, we've got this, we've got this, this great new 3D engine or whatever. And ultimately that ended up being a thing. You know, when you look at interviews and quotes from Ragnar Tornquist, you know, basically he says we were not able to really do what we wanted to do because of this graphics, you know, the graphics engine that we were working with, and because of the demand that we develop it simultaneously, you know, for Xbox, which resulted in this game taking a long time to come out. And also, let's say it's uneven and let's say patchy state that it is in even now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, a bummer. So this came out as an Xbox original Xbox game 6 months into the life cycle of the Xbox 360.
That's crazy to me.
Yep. Not great. And was not as well received as the Longest Journey. This is going to be one of the more negative takes on it online, even though it was not as well received. Like, this game isn't hated, even though I hated it.
It's the usual thing of like, oh, the mechanics are not very good, but the story is really well told. Is kind of the cliche that this falls into. I defy that.
I disagree with both. Honestly, they can both be bad. The game sold pretty poorly. It had a really high piracy rate, and Funcom took their ball and left. They stopped doing offline games for about a decade. That's when they made The Secret World, and something else I can't remember.
They did Age of Conan. They did the Conan MMORPG. Yeah, they wouldn't do a single player game until they took Secret World assets and made The Park. The Park is not very good.
it's maybe not a great developer.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, just
people love the shit out of The Secret World. I can't tell you how many times people have said, "Oh, you guys need to do that."
I tried to play The Secret World at some point. I paid for it, like, mm-hmm. back before it was free, because it got its, like, Lovecraft hooks into me, as a premise. And I couldn't do, and this is on me, not it, but I couldn't do the MMO interface. Mm-hmm. Like, you open up and your UI is just, like, absolutely full of scrolling text things. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, and it was jittery. Like, I connected to the server badly and I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
It does sound interesting to me, mm-hmm. but I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. Fans also said, like, hey, there's, like, lots of holes here and nothing is really resolved. And Turnquist kind of got on his blog and, you know, answered a couple of questions about stuff that basically said, yeah, we intended for Dreamfall to be a duology. Like, this is one half of an overall game, which is like, oh, that's weird. You didn't say that was the case. So this is not a complete story or product. Cool. And they announced Dreamfall Chapters right away in 2007, and it would take 7 more years to come out. 7 more years.
So that was kickstarted, as we mentioned, largely due to Cole Ross, who's responsible for this company getting money and continuing to make bad games.
This isn't Funcom. This is Turnquist he's got like one partner. I just wanted to be clear. You can joke, but at least make your jokes accurate, Gary.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nothing like the accuracy of a good joke. Dreamfall Chapters brings Zoe's story to an end, and we probably find out what happens to Bryn. There's going to be a third game called The Longest Journey Home, which would have followed Chapters and picked up on the story of April Ryan, who's, as far as I know, is at the bottom of a lake. apparently that's really sad. It's more of a screensaver than a game.
It's just her decomposing over the course of 2 months.
It's more for being a human ecosystem for a family of fish. But you do get to raise and name those fish and do little eugenics on them.
It's Insane Aquarium is what it is.
Yeah, Nornquist. Ragnar Nornquist.
Yeah.
The longest creatures.
Now, do yourself a favor and don't go looking into, like, the way April Ryan's story is continued. I'll just say it. She's reincarnated as a character named Saga, who begins as a little girl but, like, ages rapidly.
And she
becomes the old lady who tells the bracketing, like the framing device story of The Longest Journey. Oh, yeah,
I see. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
Let's do it. So we begin on a prologue. Each of these little chapters has a little title. This is called Tainted. I had completely forgotten about this prologue by the time I called back to it at the end.
Yeah, this feels like this is whomst is this answering a demand from? Who is like, it's been years since I played The Longest Journey, and the person who I most want to know more about is Brian Westhouse and his origins of getting
from Stark to Arcadia. Yeah.
We get a lot of Westhouse content.
So this is setting up kind of like broader things that are going to be answered in chapters. I don't care for what they're ultimately doing. It is super weird that this kind of explains what is going on cosmologically with it, with everything that's happening here. But like, we've got Brian Westhouse, and I love, like, I basically never just call him Brian in the notes. It's always Brian Westhouse.
Like, well, neither do they.
Right.
Like,
it's the horse, Steve Baxter. Yeah. But he's like, writing at his desk in this monastery, you know, talking about this inner conflict that he has about which world he will choose to stay in. And this is a character, Brian Westhouse, like we said, like, this is a person that April Ryan goes to meet in, like, one scene. He's like a drunk who ended up moving from Stark to Arcadia, but couldn't move back. And like, this is him leaving a record for anybody else who might do what he did.
I was the way that this game is, it does its like interleaving and, you know, is laid out makes no sense to me because I spent a lot of the first couple chapters of this waiting for this to come back in some way that was meaningful.
Yeah.
Like, and it, there are weird little hints to this. So like a monk comes and grabs you and you go follow him to the ritual chamber. In the ritual chamber, there are two monks having a conversation and looking at you. You can go close to them and you have an option to eavesdrop and they catch you and they stop you. And I'm like, oh, I'm in an adventure game. I need to find out what they're saying. So I spent, you know, minutes, like not tons of time, but trying to figure out how to do that. Because I was like, this is an adventure game. I need to know what they're saying. I'm just at a monastery doing a ritual. This seems like something that could go bad. Like, what if they're, you know, they're giving me the side eye. So I'm like sneaking around, going to the other side of them, trying to eavesdrop on them. You can't.
Nope.
At least as far as I know, that's not what you're supposed to do. You are just an interactive cutscene. You're just supposed to walk in the middle of the thing, go through the portal.
Right.
And this is telling me what type of game this is going to be, but not signaling it. So I wasted a lot of time and expected this to be plot relevant and play relevant in a way that it wasn't.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. It's just like, no, just there's a glowing spot. Go stand on it. Everything else. Everything else is you delaying what must inevitably happen. But like you step on this and you're sent through into what appears to be like an ice cap. This is we're going to learn a place called Storytime. And we talk to this tattooed, evil looking man. He's called the Vagabond. And he asks why you're here. And Brian Westhouse does not give an answer, really. The Vagabond says the Undreaming is here. And this kind of eldritch monstrosity appears in the sky. And tendrils come down and overtake Brian. So what we have just been shown is like the arrival of this big ultimate, you know, corrosive force that is going to threaten everybody and everything. Like the Undreaming is big and huge, and it is never alluded to or spoken of again until the end of this.
Yeah. How much homemade tarot deck does all this stuff have, energy does it have between the Vagabond, Story Time, the Undreaming? I'm just imagining like a pre-order tarot deck with all these things. Like, this is the Vagabond. Yeah. So this doesn't matter. We go into chapter one. We cut to Zoe, who's in a hospital bed, comatose. She's narrating from the end of her story. And she's like, I'm very sad. I won't be able to say goodbye to my father. It all began. And we start the game. I also forgot about this.
Yeah.
That she's $1 million babied until the end, where I was like, oh, yeah, we did start out $1 million babied.
And then we cut the 2 weeks earlier. Do you see what I mean when I say oops, all framing devices?
Yeah. It's just, again, in love with the language of cinema. This kind of shit. Zoe's in your like palatial, cabana. Watching this like hammy news broadcast. There's something called the static and it caused an accident.
Right.
On the highway. The screen gets staticky. And then it shows her this disturbing image of a young girl standing in a frozen waste outside of the cabin from the DVD cover of Cabin in the Woods, and says, "Find her, save her."
Yes,
this is going to keep happening. She's going to keep having these visions.
Any screen that Zoe is nearby is going to get ringued like this.
Yes,
yeah.
Big J horror vibes to this little haunted girl.
Yes. And also big general horror vibes to, what's his name? The little, little purple robot gorilla doll. Gordy?
I thought Gordy. I can't remember his name right now. The Wadi.
Yeah. It's a Wattilla. Yeah. Wonkers. Wonkers.
I actually love this thing. This may be Wanta Wonkers, like pretty bad, even though I'm sure that they were evil and I won't have an Amazon Echo in my house.
Right.
I still like maybe Wanta Wonkers because he's real sweet.
Wonkers is very cute and he is sweet. But like when Wonkers gets right up in her face, kind of like that Princess Peach meme, like, don't you just want to go apeshit? And like speaks just like, hi, I'm a
hello, Zoe.
Hello.
Would you like to play a game with me?
I'm a 45-year-old businessman. Would you like me to tell you what the weather's going to be today?
Yeah. Would you like to know your messages, Zoe? Promise me you'll come back. I could use this kind of friendship in my life, is what I'm trying to say. So yeah, yeah, the most thrilling aspirational part of this was going through the museum of various wonkers later and being like, I would like all of these robot friends.
Wonker squad assemble.
Yeah, wonkers tactics.
Yeah. So, we get to learn about this message. It's a reminder from her gym, and that ends up being kind of the driving force of this. She's got to go and learn how to kickbox and engage with the worst system in this game.
Real small ball initially.
Yeah.
The initial plot hook was a guy a long time ago did something you won't remember, and we have to make it to the gym. you head downstairs, you meet her father. I love this relationship.
Yes.
This is really lived in and warm. Both, we mentioned the voice acting. The voice acting is really good, both on Zoe and her father. Mm-hmm. There are these like nice narrative things. Like, you can't go into his room because like, oh, we Castillos like our privacy. Like, he stays out of my room and I stay out of his. That feels like a single father, like, you know, adult daughter living with her father dynamic.
Yes.
To me, that felt really believable. Mm-hmm. I really like this.
Yeah.
He's going on this business trip to Bombay, so he'll be gone for a couple weeks. And you kind of go back and forth about how you're in this existential crisis. Like, you're very directionless. Yeah. You dropped out of college because you hated your major. You just broke up with your boyfriend. You're not qualified for any jobs. Every day is the same.
Yeah,
even though you're in like perfect shape and you live in a palace and you go work out every day.
It stands in stark contrast to the beginning of Longest Journey, where April was a college student, very passionate about what she was doing, but living in basically a slum and, you know, in a tenement building and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, Zoe is, you know, is affluent. You know, you're here in Casablanca where everything is, you know, flying cars, you know.
Yeah. There's a weird thing that happened with me with Class Conscious, Gary, where an incredibly affluent protagonist does alienate me.
Yeah.
Like, I was not, like, I understand ennui, but the kind of ennui of the rich, which is what this is, like the ennui of the idle rich who can do anything they want, they just don't know what they want to do, does not elicit very much sympathy from me.
Yeah.
In this year of our Lord 2020.
As presented, I identified with it, you know, just like, I really don't know if I believe in anything I'm doing, but yeah, like if you scratch anywhere below the surface.
You believe anything you're doing.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Crisis, folks.
What's that?
Cole's out.
No, I'm like 10 years ago, like before I started doing the job that I wanted to do.
Calling.
I mean, I don't know.
The podcaster's sword.
Yep. Before the microphone shouted to me and said, you must, Cole, you must.
The podcasting blade.
Yeah. No. But generally Zoe's problem here is relatable, even if she does not have material problems, let's say.
I had a hard time with it. I was like, write a fucking book or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. How does somebody exist without interests? If you have unlimited, you know, capacity to explore those interests, how can you be unhappy? And I know that's a thing that really happens. Mm-hmm. It's just something I don't relate to at all.
Yeah.
You head outside, there are airships, there's a like this drawing focus to this futuristic skyline letting us know about the future. We get a very tantalizingly few but actually pretty neat little world building details about what the future of Stark is like.
Yeah.
All these things, you know, the hand that bites, and stuff like that. I think that's really cool. Things like that. But we don't get full details on it, which is actually kind of good.
Yeah.
It's way better than it is in Arcadia, where it's much more stock.
Yeah. We learn about supply lines and stuff.
Yeah. You are heading out, you run into, your friend.
Yeah.
Your impossibly good hearted and, supportive friend.
Yeah. Just always helpful. Always there for you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, you need me to break the law, love. I'll do it. You know, just like, oh, you need me to hack into this thing remotely.
Uh-huh.
No problem. Anything for you, love.
Yeah.
Like, just, she's basically an item. It's like an omni tool, you know?
Yeah. And then she just goes away. Like, Zoe never calls her and says like, hey, I'm going to be wrapped up in some crazy shit. Like, hey, don't worry about me. Or like, hey, I'm wrapped up in some crazy shit. Like, maybe you should like lay
Please
low.
Worry about me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, I'm going to go into a magic induced coma for a little bit with a guy I just met.
Yeah.
Who I'm in love with. Mm-hmm. She totally drops off the face of the earth, but I'm sure she gets her own chapter. In the chapters. She's this tech wizard. Like, she works in like a what I got the impression is like a gray market tech.
Yeah, she's like she's importing phones. And God, yeah. I love this because their concept of cell phones, like this was pre-iPhone, so like it's just flip phones that have that do extra stuff when you press buttons on them.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, like she, you know, she imports iPhones and like deals in gray market software. Specifically, she has something for something for Zoe that will kind of like render her phone invisible to the eye in the sky. Kind of the yes. The paramilitary police force that is mm-hmm. watching over all of Stark.
Yep. That's cool. Mm. You go to the gym, you get your fighting tutorial from your instructor, Gemma, who I also expected to be more of a character. Like, Gemma really chews the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
In this, there's a lot of like, sorry, I'm late.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry does not cut it when you're training to be the best. Like, all of this weird, like, she's from Kevin's storyline.
Yeah.
Or Kian's storyline. but without knowing it.
Yes.
And this is your fighting tutorial. It's trash. You can do as many times as you want.
Mm-hmm.
But why would you? It sucks.
Yeah, I don't know. And shame on me for assuming the character's mentor or, you know, somebody who instructs the character would be involved in anything else.
It's real weird. Like the pacing of it, like it moving past certain characters really mm-hmm. fast, but staying on other characters for longer.
Yeah.
Is just very strange. There are a few side characters in this. This character and then the dirt bag at the hotel.
Yes.
Who, like, I feel like don't know that they weren't going to show up later. Mm-hmm. Like, the actors didn't know because they give it their all in a way that's really hammy.
Right.
And kind of inappropriately hammy. And, like, mm-hmm. the thing that the good voice acting in this game has in common is that it's right-sized. Right? Like, Zoe is, you know, does lean too hard on the, like, tell me what's going on button later. Mm-hmm. But she's not, you know, histrionic. You know, mm-hmm. Histrionic. Like, it's not like she's just doing a voice.
Right.
But this character feels like she's doing the sensei voice and the dirtbag in the hotel is doing the surfer dude voice
mm-hmm.
in a way that plays to the back seats.
Yeah. And doesn't necessarily land. It's not an effective chewing of the scenery because that can be good.
That can
lighten things. Zoe gets a call from Reza. This is her ex-boyfriend. There's kind of a subplot here where Zoe's trying to put together a party. You know, it's like, a little get together. And she's talking with some of her friends, like, do we want to bring Reza in? Like, Zoe still has a relationship with him, but, you know, it's just like, yeah.
They're really good friends.
Yeah, they're very good friends.
Like, they're very close friends.
She puts her life on the line to finish, like, to find him and finish his work.
Yeah.
Like,
yep. And try to avenge his death and then, you know, doesn't.
Yeah.
It's a fucking clone.
No, Gary, he's just been brainwashed, okay?
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, yeah, that's not Reza. Huge longest journey or that Last Express vibes uh-huh. to that for me. The like but one thing, that's not Reza. Fuck you. Oh, I don't care. So you go to meet this coffee shop.
Yeah.
He's a journalist for The Hand That Bites, which is, you know, this muckraking, whistleblowing thing about the dark dystopian future.
The Intercept or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Working on a really big story you can't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You have, again, the pretty lived in relationship I like.
Yeah.
You know, talking about Zoe's lack of direction. And he says, like, hey, listen, I need a big favor. I'm on to something big. I need you to go to this biotech firm called Jiva and get this package from Helena Chang.
Right.
For me.
Mm-hmm. Say it's, you know, say it's from me and she will hand it over. And Zoe, mm-hmm. I forget if there's even an option to say like, no, I don't want to. Or just like, yeah, I'll help you. That is fine. And so you hop into a taxi, ride across town to get to Jiva. And there's a very strange woman at the receptionist desk. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can talk to her. It's, you know, it's very apparent that, that this is, somebody who does not belong here. Especially when the girl appears in the static on the screen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the view, the girl screen, and then also the view screen shows, the woman she has locked up
mm-hmm.
in the glass chamber.
Oh yeah.
This is something they give up on very early.
Yeah.
There are multiple ways to get past this puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
That only happens in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Later on, everything kind of becomes done in one.
Yes.
But I did it. I tricked her into walking into a closet
mm-hmm.
And locked her in it.
Yeah.
You can fight her. There's a third thing you can do. I can't remember.
Yeah. I took too long to lock her into the closet. She got out and ended up having to fight her. And Zoe is not mm-hmm. good at combat, you know, here. So that was a bit of a problem. Yeah. But there are multiple ways to, you know, kind of like have it shake out. And that can give you hope that, you know, the game is going to continue doing that. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Inside, you go in, you see this character named, you know, she, once you lock her in, she radios her partner. So, mm-hmm. You know, this is like we walked in on a shadow run, basically.
Yeah.
You know, inside we find this character named Kano, who is taunting Chang, mm-hmm. who's locked in this like evil glass chamber.
Yeah.
Kano runs away and the chamber starts filling with gas. So you have to get up on top to push the emergency release lever to let her mm-hmm. out.
Yes.
She rushes you out and she is not particularly warm or expository.
No.
During this, like she gives you the package, but she's very suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you would tell her your name, she, you know, that does a recognition blip for yeah. her.
And then Chang disappears from the story until she becomes the most important person in the entire world.
It's very weird.
Yeah. So we get the package and we go to Reza's place and like Zoe notices like, oh, there's a cat in the hallway. That's weird. And the door is open. That's weird. There's a corpse in Reza's apartment. That's weird.
One of those, two of those things seem weirder than the cat.
Yeah.
I understand why they're drawing attention to the cat.
Uh-huh.
Now it's very weird that Zoe cares. Like none of his neighbors have a cat. It's like, uh-huh. how do you fucking know?
Yeah.
You know, so you get in there, the static message appears again, find April, save April, good fucking God.
Yeah.
And then it shows you security footage of the I commandos storming the front door of the apartment, mm-hmm. Who come in and stun you. And I was pretty into this. Like I'm like, this is interesting. You get stuck in this like black box interrogation room.
Mm-hmm.
being held for anti-corporate activities, and they're asking you questions. There's no consequence here, but you get to choose, you know, how much you cooperate or not.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Like, you know, this is a cool conspiracy. Like I'm wrapped up in something,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
They let you go. You can't leave town. And they say like, if Reza tries to contact you, get in touch with us.
Right. And this takes us to chapter 2, Lost, because Reza is nowhere to be found. You know, Zoe is standing on the balcony, you know, like basically leaving another message like, hey, you know, shit's gotten real. If you can just let me know that you're alive, that's good. And when she goes inside, Wonkers gets right up in her face and then licks his lips and says, oh, I've got a message from Reza. Saying like, hey, I've basically, you know, set up a little macro. If I don't talk to you, you know, over the course of 24 hours, you need to know that I keep my most recent work in an updated encrypted notebook in my apartment. You know, something has probably happened. I am probably just, you know, like inconvenient somewhere. Don't worry about me, but please get that notebook to my editor.
Save the notebook.
Yeah.
Extremely weird move for an ex-boyfriend to tell the PDA of his ex-girlfriend that if I don't message it every 24 hours
yeah.
to do something, that feels like maybe I don't want a Wonkers now. If like all my exes could leave like mm-hmm. contingency plans in it. You know, you head there to go get it. And he says, check in with his Wonkers.
Yes.
You know, when you go there, there's an eye barricade on it. So you have to go to your tech tool friend, Olivia, to get a piece of software to unlock it. She explains how code breaking works,
mm-hmm.
And says that she's going to look up information on Jizza. There's the Rizza and the Reza and the Jizza.
I wrote this as Jiza, but it's Jiva. It's the yeah, company Jiva. that you visited.
And no, got I know. I wanted to make the Wu-Tang Clan
yes.
joke between the Reza and the Jiza. And stuff.
Yeah.
And old dirty Wonkers.
Yeah. You got to watch out for the ghost face killer.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you go there and you do this little symbol matching game to get in the apartment. This is not great.
No.
This out of the two mini games in this, they show you a symbol. You have to find it in a grid and it mm-hmm. changes every once in a while. And if you take too long, it resets your progress.
Yes. Yeah, it's not great. The symbols yeah. are designed for my eyes to roll over them.
I think they're designed for everyone's
I suppose,
eyes to roll yeah. over them. Yeah, they're like where Waldo's things.
Yes. Yeah. But you pop the barricade and you go in, and you find okay, yes, the place has been ransacked, and the eye has left behind this lethal security spider. And it actually, like, when you step in, Lucia, Reza's robot ape. So Lucia is Reza's wonkers. Sentences, mm-hmm. Gary. Lucia is Reza's wonkers.
Wonkers. Yeah.
So you've got to figure out a way to get around this thing without triggering it to shoot at you, because Lucia talked shit and got shot.
Yeah. Yeah. There's two solutions to this.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we're slowly, like, the solution countdown has begun in chapter two. The way that I did it, which is very funny, like I went, snuck into the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
Turned on the radio for it to go into the bathroom, and then locked it in the shower, which this was now the second time I tricked somebody into going into a room and then locked them in. And I was like, is this whole game going to be that with, yeah, like Zoe's move? The other way you can do it is go up behind it and get the model number. And then go check in with Olivia, and she'll give you a way to hack it.
Oh, cool.
That's more backtracking and stuff. I didn't do that. I just read about it.
Yeah.
Regardless, when you get this, you harvest the brain components from Lucia and give it back to Olivia, who says, you know, this is frayed. I can give you a battery to put it in, and then it needs a new central processing unit. So go get Wonkers.
Go harvest Wonkers.
Go harvest your friend.
Yeah. So you go in, you talk to him, and you say, where you're going, there will be sleep, but no dreams. A peace that is, you cannot differentiate it from the dark. All of that, you take out Wonker's brain.
He makes you promise that you'll put it back,
mm-hmm.
and you don't for a while.
You don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to either.
Right.
Like it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
I also really wonder what games they play. Like, he's constantly like, you know, would you like to play a game? And you can't do it because, you know, there's urgency afoot.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, this would be a good place to put in like a little game of blackjack or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for a little character.
Or for Wonkers, probably like a jigsaw kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. Like a series of traps.
Yeah.
In the
each more deadly than the last.
Appreciate life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like tying her to carry Elu's.
Yeah. But you take this, you do activate Wonkers. I just want to like underline right now just how much we are just, we run to one side of the map. We learn that we need something. We run all the way to the other side of the map to get the thing that we need. Then we run back to the other side of the map to put it in, and then you need this other thing, so run back to the other side of the map. Like, it's, we're doing shuttle runs across this, except shuttle runs get shorter as you go.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. The chapter winter,
uh-huh,
when you're Zoe first in Arcadia, mm-hmm. the beginning of that is so ludicrously like, go to one person who tells you to go to another person.
Yeah.
Like it's the link, it's the
Link's Awakening.
Link's Awakening, yeah, like, you know, FedEx Quest,
mm-hmm.
all over again. And that shit sucks in Link's Awakening. I like Link's Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
That shit sucks in Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
And it sucks here as well.
Yeah.
So you put your best friend to sleep and you head back. You put your best friend's brain in your ex-boyfriend's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells you where the safe is, and sends you over to the bed, which is very strange. It's just like, this is a real like long play to get you back, isn't it, Reza? You know,
just like, Reza worked with an ARG company.
Yeah, to get his girlfriend back. Yeah. That's a niche business.
Yeah,
the get your ex girlfriend back ARG company is pretty dark.
Yeah.
You head over there, and then some like cast offs from the Matrix Revolutions comes in or something.
Yeah. So instead of being the two albino twins, it is kind of just two mute assassins. Like I guess they're twins, but like one has pink hair, the other has purple hair, and they just kind of show up whenever there needs to be like, you shouldn't be here.
The way that these things tie into the main plot and the reveal of what these things actually are, I find immensely unsatisfying.
I don't remember what they actually are. They're just servants of
Mojo.
Oh, gotcha. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more than that. They're just they're Mojo's servants, and Mojo's motivation for doing anything he does with Mojo's servants is so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Dislike.
Yeah.
So they attack. One of them gets this transmission, so they decide not to kill you, but they do knock you, like choke you out.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take the diary, which would make sense.
Yeah.
And when you go outside, you see that cat again. That's watching you. So whenever there are cats, there's There's badness.
I mean, like, is it literally supposed to be that the cats aren't what they seem? Like, that
the cat is Mojo.
Is it?
The cat is Mojo watching his twins. And his name isn't Mojo. I keep calling him.
Right. His name's like Pete's. Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like Mojo from the X-Men.
Right.
A lot. Like, actionably.
Yeah.
Like Mojo from the X-Men. So the cat is Mojo. This is him controlling waking dreams, like experimenting with the dreamer.
Gotcha.
Mind control shit.
Okay. Yeah. So, I did not draw the connection between Pete's and the cat. So,
well, maybe if you spent a svelte 8 hours dealing with Arcadian supply lines, that would allow you to connect these dots.
Maybe, yeah. Because
that's what happens. Like, you get this plot, and then before they put those information together, you just spend a whole lot of time talking about medical shipments and supply lines. Like, yeah. No one can blame anybody for losing any of these plots.
Mm-hmm. So you take this notebook. It's like a hard drive, and it's encrypted. So you take it to Olivia. She decodes it, and you learn, okay, he's looking into something called the Fringe that is found in Newport in Venice, and like his connection, the person he's talking to, is someone named Charlie. If you played The Longest Journey 8.5 years ago, this would sound vaguely familiar. If you played it more recently than that, you're probably like, oh yeah, Venice, Charlie, like those are important things. Okay, cool.
Yeah. This I really thought was going to be a puzzle, because the note actually just says Fringe Network Venice Charlie.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, FNVC, is that going to be a code for something? Like, you know, is this going to be anything more than that? But the characters just solve it for you and tell you where to go. So you can go put in the brain if you want into Wonkers. You had to get your backpack, which is something you could always look at and be like, I don't need my backpack. Like, very weird. And you head out for Venice.
Right. And
we get our first like clue of like the shit, feel like, of just like, I hate this and this is boring.
Stuff. We get a scene in the snowy wilderness. A group of kind of civilians, of rebel soldiers, ambush a group of Azadi soldiers, and they even say like, I guess the Azadis are here. You're playing as, you know, just this group of cloaked rangers controlling April. Stick fights these dudes. And we learn that they are headed to the city of Mercuria. Again, you probably remember, oh, Mercuria is the city in Arcadia. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So all of this is coming back together. And oh shit, that's April. I remember her from the first game.
Yeah. She's got her crew with her. We're introduced to her new people, her weird Romulan or Vulcan magic person who poisons them to give you a distraction so you can go in and kill them.
Right.
You're rebels, you get hot-headed Bryn. Mm-hmm. We move over to chapter 3, which is called 201. You're playing as Zoe again. You're exploring the poverty of Venice Newport.
Yes.
Here. Mm-hmm. And get directions to the Fringe, which is a club.
Right.
They let you in after you mention Reza, and we talked to Charlie, who was in the first game.
Yeah.
Who is solid. Mm-hmm. I like Charlie.
Yeah, he's like, oh god, I haven't, you know, like, yeah, Reza was here and talking about this. And eventually, like, when it becomes clear that this has something to do with April, he's like, okay, yeah, no, we need to figure this out, because you know, he has given up hope, because April went missing 10 years ago, like shortly before something called the collapse, kind of, you know, before this kind of like rough reunification or resetting that happened. And they've got a friend, Emma, again, remember from the first game, who has never given up hope and who has like continued the search for, you know, their missing friend. Charlie's good. And like, he's kind of made good. Like, the Fringe is a nice club. You know, it's very exclusive. Like, this used to be the cafe where he worked. Mm-hmm. And like, he bought it, and then like a new crime cartel bought it, but he still like runs it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's neat. Yeah. It's good to see Charlie make good, because I remember him being solid.
Yeah, he's a charismatic character.
Yeah.
He lets you know that Reza was looking into this old border house that Reza used to live in, which is now a hotel called the Victory Hotel.
April and Charlie used to live
there. April used to live in. Well, they both did, yeah. Charlie used to live there and April used to live there. Mm-hmm. You leave. You follow this to get to the hotel, but it is padlocked. Mm-hmm. So you find this guy who sells Mogwais, who's in a tent, who, and this is, you know, not great.
Mm-hmm.
And he will sell you a digital lockpick. And again, your plot friend, who is just an omni item, you don't have anything to do. You don't have to solve a puzzle. You have to call your friend.
Yeah.
And they just give you a program.
Yeah. He's just like, oh, yes. And, you know, like all of my accomplices, you know, the kind of software that we need will make us invisible. Yes. And like, oh, yeah, I remember my friend saying something about being invisible. Then you just get the app to do the transfer. Yeah. You have to use your friend as an inventory item. It's like been there, done that.
Yep. Yeah. And you use them a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it just made me think, why isn't Olivia going on this mission?
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird proxy.
She's really important.
Yeah. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
So you go and you can pick the lock, on this, to get in. You know, this is the mini game I like.
Mm-hmm.
You're matching, you have four wheels, and they have symbols at the cardinal points, mm-hmm. and you can pass the symbols between wheels.
Yeah.
So the, middle slot will, you know, will transfer,
mm-hmm.
You know, one of those symbols, and you have to match the top and bottom.
Yeah.
And you only do like two of these in the game, I think.
Yeah. I only remember two. It's like this one and then the one with the warehouse at the end.
And in Germany.
Yeah.
Or Russia rather. But this is neat to me. Mm-hmm. It's a real weird, like, red herring though, because the way you're doing this to get into the backyard, to get an axe, to get into the building another way.
Mm-hmm.
There is a hound dog, like a junkyard dog,
mm-hmm.
that you have to sneak when the train is going by. And some of the most like clumsy puzzle cluing I've ever seen is April immediately saying, that dog doesn't even seem bothered by the train. Mm-hmm. The train doesn't even wake it up. Like, it's a weird thing to notice with your fucking eyes.
Yeah.
You know, like immediately.
Yeah. Like, these are the only two things that matter in the world, is the train moving and the dog's reaction to it. I'm going to say that no one in particular.
Super tedious, you know, sneak when the train is going by, stop when not.
Yeah, she might as well just say, if I time it just right, and like let you figure out that she's talking about the train. Yeah.
Back in the day, we used to play red light, green light. You know, so you get this to get an axe, and then you go into the canal and push a dumpster over to go up to a boarded up window and smash your way into the hotel's basement.
Right.
Inside, you know, the axe, like the axe head just goes missing.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have the axe handle. So you make a torch to get through this next little hallway, by dipping it in the correct can, and then lighting it on a pilot light.
There's just an array of open cans, on the table here. And you have to inspect them and say like, this one smells like water. This one smells like kerosene. This one smells like gasoline.
Yep. This one smells like water again.
Yeah.
This one smells like nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, not a puzzle.
Yeah.
I want to point out that I think this sequence, this is my favorite sequence of the game.
Oh, it's good.
I think this hotel is creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I am invested in following my investigative journalist friend, and they uncovered something creepy.
Yeah.
We're just not going to stick with this.
No.
You know, like this is really cool.
Mm-hmm. It's a good callback. Like, this is a familiar space that is deteriorated. Like, it's gone entirely to seed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah.
And you find in the basement of this, like, just the idea of like, oh, they say it's a hotel, but you can't actually get in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing some dark science stuff here. Like, all this shit speaks to me.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of tropes, like, you get in the basement, there's a security room.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool.
Yeah, it's new, like it's like recently installed, and you know, it's a hotel, but they're observing every one of the rooms.
Yeah. You know, and you can see the rooms, and they're not hotel rooms; they're like one soiled mattress.
Yeah,
on the ground. Like, oh, like you know, your best case scenario, junkies live here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, the girl appears on the monitor, says to save April Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use your. You know, your phone to hack the security monitors to open the door to get upstairs. I found that counterintuitive. Like previously I'd used that on an eye lock. Mm-hmm. There is an eye lock in the slums, but you can't hack that one. This one, it's just like, oh, my phone can hack, you know, eye locks and then all purpose computers, but cannot hack padlocks. I need a different thing for that. Like that felt arbitrary and dumb to me.
Yeah. And you carry both items around for the rest of the game. And so you're kind of always, you know, needing to guess between which one is which, which one is for which. But you get upstairs to the first floor, and they've got this guard, Waza, mm-hmm. who is a character, I believe, from the first game, conspicuously Australian. And he is, you know, kind of half sleeping, watching sports in the other room, and you emerge into the kitchen and there is, I don't know what, like, there's an appliance on the counter that is specifically for reheating and rehydrating pizza.
Man, they have those in Back to the Future too, dude.
Oh, huh.
Yeah, like it's almost exactly this.
Weird. I don't remember that.
It also looks like the Pizzazz.
Yeah.
The Pizzazz pizza maker, which my mom was a huge proponent of.
Huh.
Like, she loved that thing. She kept offering to get me one. I was like, I don't eat frozen pizzas that often, Mom. I don't need a singular appliance for making frozen pizzas.
No. Ovens are fine.
Yeah. You know, and I just, yeah, it doesn't, I don't know that that's counter space I can't afford.
Yeah.
But the way you distract him is you set it to give his pizza early, mm-hmm. and then you sneak past him while he's going on a pizza run.
Yeah. Or you can just like alert him and talk to him. Like you can get around him just by pretending, like basically like calling his bluff a little bit and saying, oh yeah, no, I saw this was a hotel. I just wanted to come and see if he had any rooms available. Yeah. There are like multiple steps to, you know, to get through.
You can fight him as well. Waza. If you want.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But I talked my way past him because I was not able to successfully sneak.
I did the pizza gambit.
Yeah.
The upstairs, you know, again, good stuff. You mm-hmm. go into a room and there's a woman sleeping on her back on one of these soil mattresses with a flower stuck to her face.
Yeah.
That is goes into a Roomba. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
Flower Roombas.
Yeah. Well, and like the flower, like there's something about the texture work or the color work on it. It looks kind of meaty.
Yeah,
it's like a
this
little
is great.
it's good,
you know.
And like, okay, that's really weird. There's nothing I can do about that. We will just make a note of it in the future. Mm-hmm. And eventually you get to April's room. It's locked, so you have to go upstairs, you know, make a rope out of a towel and a sheet. Which mm-hmm. is funny, you have to find both of them and they're both extremely soiled. To kind of get down,
probably not adding that much to the length.
Probably not. No.
This
well, it might be a beach know. towel, might be fine.
It's not, though. We see it.
Oh, yeah.
you know, this is just a lot of, like, hullabaloo.
Yeah.
Like, you know, get around here. While you're doing this, you run into a guy who's walking around, and it looks mm-hmm. really creepy. Like, there's actually some chosen shots.
Yes.
Of you, like, going into a place and you seeing a guy walk between rooms. Mm-hmm. You can go talk to him. He sleepwalks.
Yeah.
He'll fight you, and this will call up the guard, so you can end up fighting Waza up here. You can also run and just solve the problem to get down into room 201.
Yes. This is April's room from the first game. And you can open up the closet. I think that like a screen shows up, you know, like, or you saw an image of this room before with like the girl
pointing at the closet.
Yeah, pointing at the closet. When you open it up, you find a photograph. It's Charlie with April and Emma. And it's really weird that this photograph is still here 10 years after this room's occupant went missing.
Yeah, I was really expecting this to be something a little bit less bloodless than just a picture.
Yes.
Because the little girl sending you to do this, the only thing I can think of is that you're going to need Charlie and Emma's help.
Yes.
Is the reason why she sent you to the picture, and the picture is going to get Charlie to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie basically is already helping you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. This felt like not the kind of thing that a Ringu would...
Right.
Leave a trail of breadcrumbs for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus, the dirtbag, person who lives in this room, who also works for whatever is going on in this hotel,
mm-hmm.
who, I mean, playing it to fucking 11.
Yes.
This guy, big, mm-hmm. big performance.
He was a sleazebag in the first game, too. I think that they brought him back for this. Yeah.
For Marcus heads out there.
Yeah.
All you Marcus heads. You know, you had to go, you talk to him, you say like, oh, I thought this room wasn't being used, mm-hmm. or what I did, I bluffed and said, you know, he's like, hey, I'm looking for my friend. Perhaps you can find him. And I offer him money mm-hmm. and I say, meet at the Fringe. And he's like, oh, you can get into the Fringe. I would have just done it for that.
Yeah.
You know, because that has like a 2-year waiting list for people who are famous even mm-hmm. to get in.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I've been there. No one's ever in there. And also, yeah, I'm friends with the owner and he calls me girl a lot. So
yes,
we're good.
So you arrive at the club, you know, and Marcus is not there just yet. And you show Charlie the picture. So like, yeah, you know, she disappeared 10 years ago in 2009, right before the collapse. Do you remember what the collapse was? And this other girl, like we said, Emma didn't give up hope. We need to get her over here. And Zoe explains these images, saying like, hey, you know, I have no reason to be connected to any of you guys, but I'm getting image, you know, I'm getting visions that are related to her. So I really need to either find her or figure out who she was. We need to have a conversation about this.
Yeah. Yeah. So he says he'll get Emma there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned Marcus. He says Marcus was there too. We cut to some time later where Zoe has explained everything to Charlie and Emma. Emma's there. Mm-hmm. One of the rare times they don't just have the character do the exposition in front of the player.
Yes.
And talk about how April was chased out by some corporate troops and ultimately hopped on this shuttle to an orbital station.
Right.
And then mention Argadia, April's experiences with this parallel world.
Right. You know, and just saying like, yeah, that's got something to do with the collapse. And you're like, okay, well, this is really good. You know, like Reza's looking for her. I need to check in. I need to share this information. So you go back to the private rooms. You know, and Zoe tries to make a call and leave a message for him. But Marcus shows up, and guess who he has in tow? He's got the twin women from before. Again, they just show up at these oh shit moments. And they incapacitate Zoe and attach the flower pod to her. And we are out of the good portion of the game.
Yes. And in the interest of this not being a 6-hour episode.
Yes.
Now that we're in the bad portion of the game, I would suggest that we pick up the pace a little bit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that happens here, but mostly like the stuff of interest has literally ended for me, basically.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy thing to say,
mm-hmm.
like this early in the game. And I, at this point in the game, in my like emotional journey with Dreamfall, I was still waiting for it to come back.
Yes.
You know, I was like, let's get back to the cool shit. You know, and there are a couple of brief flashes of it, but these next several chapters are just dire.
Yeah.
We are in the doldrums, starting with winter, which is, you know, you wake up in this wintry place in front of this facade of the house, you know, the creepy cabin in the woods house.
Mm-hmm.
The girl tells you to find April, save April, and you fall on the ice.
Yeah.
And when you wake up, you end up in one of my least favorite biomes. In this game, this undercity,
the underground city, with the
critters,
goblin, the little goblin, you know, stubby goblin folks, who you've got to sneak by or engage in combat with them. They do not talk. Nobody is conveying any information to you. There's some light puzzling in order to kind of like get a glowing egg that will power a few machines. And ultimately you ride a water wheel up to a mist puzzle. Like you walk up to a wall from a mist game and you have to press these symbols to create a melody that played 5 minutes ago that you can't play again.
You can't play again, which is just horrendous. Puzzle design.
Yeah.
I didn't pay attention to the melody.
Nope.
So I went on, you know, your universal hint system. They're like, well, you might not have missed it. And then the next hint is like, there's no way to replay it other than reload the game. Next hint, here's the answer. Don't reload the game.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, man. You should know better than that, Tornquist.
Yeah.
So this creates a magical portal into the cellar of a bar called the Journeyman's Inn. We've been here before.
Mm-hmm.
We go in and we meet the owner, Ben Rime Selman, who this game loves. I do not find particularly charismatic, but we spent a lot of time on her.
She was a minor character in the first one. Like, I think she got a name. You know, she was the person who found April. Like, this is where April materialized in the first game. And here she's working with the Resistance, right? Like, this is an inn that provides aid and succor to them.
Yep.
She gets, you know, Benrima is like, oh god, not another shifter, why do they always land here with me? She's like, hey, you need to go find somebody named Minstrom Magda.
Yes. This fucking sucks.
Uh-huh.
This whole bit here of being so like, you're like, where's Minstrom Magda? She says, I don't know, but there's a character named Blind Bob who knows.
Mm-hmm.
You go out and talk to Blind Bob. Blind Bob says, I know where Magda is, but I would like some mulled wine.
Mm-hmm.
Blind Bob is kind of funny.
Yep.
His whole idea is he's theoretically blind.
I should have been blinded that one time, so I should get the credit for it.
Exactly. Like, there's probably a universe out there which I am blind.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to, you know, wear these glasses and stuff. Kind of funny.
Yeah.
Needs this wine. Go to Benrime. Benrime has the wine, but doesn't have the mulling spices.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the fucking spice merchant. Every one of these characters is like doing an improv 101, like scenery chew.
Yeah.
Like all of these characters are like, finally, I'm in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Like I get to really, really have some fun with this dialogue. Like you're on a fetch quest, but not all the characters are giving you a lot of detail about themselves. And other than Blind Bob, they're not particularly fun.
No.
It doesn't give you a really good sense of the world here. Mm-hmm. Like the spice merchant talks about spice.
Yeah.
And being a merchant, because he's a spice merchant. It's mm-hmm. not like there's a good reason to have quite as much dialogue as I have with this fucker.
Right.
So there's no spice because there is traffic because the Azadi are cleaning out the ghetto of magicals.
Yes. So we get a little bit of that world building. He's got disdain for the magicals and all of the trouble that they provide. So then you got to walk all the way across town to where the traffic jam is. And oh, there's an angry porter there who's, you know, talking about like, yes, you know, those terrorists that are here trying to liberate the magicals. Just kind of goes on and on for a long time. Again, just like, can you say some like vaguely racist stuff that's like not too racist for us?
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's about these magical people, but plausibly couldn't be about real people, please, sir.
Yep.
Ugh.
Yep. Bad. So he gives you the spices, and then, fuck me, you bring the spices to get the mulled wine, which you give to Blind Bob, and Blind Bob says, I don't know.
Right.
And says you have to go to talk to another character
mm-hmm.
named Crazy Clara. You talk to Crazy Clara. Crazy Clara is not well and keeps talking about her baby that the guards took from her.
Right.
So she won't help you until you go get the baby.
Mm-hmm.
You go in and go to this cage by sneaking an alley while this gigantic Star Wars beast that you can't comment on.
Right.
Why is this not something that like Zoe would be like, oh, there's a fucking monster.
Yeah. Like or at the very least, like, yeah, like, oh, it smells atrocious or like, give me something. React.
Yeah.
This is the strangest thing you've seen. Most of it's just been like, you know, city, like you
a
know,
person with a
city.
Dumb hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like this is basic. You know, you're here in the old timey Springfield town.
Uh huh.
You know, this is the Townsend's channel. This isn't that weird. So you sneak past to get you free this little marmot.
Mm hmm.
Then you can go talk to Clara, who tells you that the Magda is the woman serving soup at the kiosk at the South Gate.
Yeah.
Now, if you had gone to the soup lady first,
yep.
She so obviously has stuff to hide and you can't ask her about the Minster Magda, even though you were sent looking for the Minster Magda and mm-hmm. asking people about the Minster Magda makes sense.
Yeah.
Like Ben Rime says, you know, don't spread that name around. But this woman is clearly like a nun working for a soup kitchen.
Right.
I feel like you could have short-circuited this bullshit
pretty
easily. And every time you're doing this, you're going all the way across town,
mm-hmm.
like three loading screens, you know, 2 to 3 loading screens every single time.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah. You are running down alleyways with buildings you will never go into. And like, like in another game, when you get to this new area and somebody says, oh, wait, you need to get these three things or, you know, like you go talk to this person and they send you to this person. They're like sending you by notable places to get you oriented.
That you'll be using.
Yeah. Just kind of like, okay, because like you're going to be here. We want you to see kind of like what the rough, what like, you know, just like what the borders of this are. Right.
Yes.
But like you're going to be in Mercuria for a while, but like you're not going to go talk to any of these people again. Like everything you need to do is just like right out in the middle of it. Yeah.
And there's nothing. Yeah. There's no, it's just a hallway. Like there is no sense of needing to get a sense of place because it's a big C-shaped hallway is the entirety of Mercuria to you
mm-hmm.
because console PC development.
Yeah.
So you talk to her, she gives you a little bit of exposition about the Azadi. Came in, they were liberators, but now they're an occupying force and they're putting the crackdown on the city to try to unite the Northland for their goddess, mm-hmm. which leads to tons of people saying goddessless, which sounds very awkward. I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, I like, you know, the Azadi said girl rights. That's awesome. I'm glad, you know, sisters are doing it for themselves. It does verbally make this really awkward.
Hire more female crusaders.
Goddesses. Yeah, we need more female lady god, like evil goddesses. More female lady goddess. So she says that there's a magical practitioner in the ghetto of Old Town that'll help you get back home.
Mm-hmm.
After the conversation, a young man who is at the inn next to you when you first came out, mm-hmm. calls you aside.
Yes.
This is Bryn. And he looks really suspicious. The camera work showed us that he was up to no good.
Mm-hmm.
He says that he is listening in. He can help you get in touch with April Ryan, and takes you into an alley and you get black bagged.
Yes. Yeah. And like Zoe says, you're not going to make me regret walking into this alley with you. No, no, it's fine. And they're like, get her, Ma.
It does exactly that. Yeah, like, Bryn is such a shitty kidnapper here.
You yeah. know,
but luckily, Zoe's a really bad kidnapping victim, so it works out. Yeah, she just goes with that.
Yeah, no, she goes with it. And she's in this building and April is there questioning you. You know, like, do we get each other caught up as much as you can? Zoe says, like, yeah, there's this creepy little girl telling me to find you. April's like, hey, I've got my own stuff to deal with. You know, I'm not really interested in saving the world or going back to Stark. You know, I may have come from there, but this is my home now. And I really don't care about these visions. That seems like a heaping helping of your problem.
I do not understand that.
Nope.
I think that somebody who had been through what she's been through.
Mm-hmm.
Just consistently saying, like, yeah, I don't care about the fact that you're getting dreams where they say my name.
Right.
You know, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should be interested in this.
Yeah.
You know, and her just be like, no, I'm not talking to clouds on a sunny day. Mm-hmm. I'm stuck with this rebel force. Like, this is the idea here is that she is so entrenched in her mundane concerns.
Right.
She's no longer following this cosmic protagonist shit. But it doesn't sell very well.
No,
I don't think.
Not at all. So, yeah. You know, so April calls in Naade, I think, something.
I don't know.
Yeah, this is the Vulcan, the magical tiger stripe lady, who can send Zoe back home. And Zoe, like, instantly disappears from her clothes. And Naade says, like, yeah, you know, she's not a shifter. She's something else.
Yes. Yeah. And you can tell by the fact that she leaves her clothes behind.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've cut over to somewhere like we cut over to Jade Empire times.
Yes.
And we're playing and this has so much Jade Empire energy. I lost my mind. I'm like, oh, I'm in Jade Empire now.
Like, oh, it starts with you playing as a main character doing like combat trials at a training school for warriors. Okay.
Yeah. Against like a weird Ross albino.
Uh-huh.
Like a dreadlocked albino. This kid named Kian.
It's funny.
Like, yeah. Like, as far as I can tell, it's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah.
So now you're doing a successive a series of tougher combats.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking to your master, Garmin, who I forgot that's not the GPS.
Yep.
So whenever he said, like, Garmin sent me here, I laughed because I thought that was how you spelled the GPS.
Like, well, I mean, it's a homophone. It sounds the same.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Just Garmin sent me here. Like, I want to start saying that whenever I go anywhere that I use the GPS.
Garmin told me this wasn't a dead end.
Yes. Garmin told me this was a two-way street. I was mistaken. perhaps I should follow the ways. Garmin is saying, like, listen, you're wasting your time and talent. Like, we both have faith, but your faith is blind and shitty. My faith is good.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, seems like a major character in Kian's life, but Kian has no major characters in his life.
No.
And you go, and this is so, again, just the boilerplateness of this,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, these people are so obviously sinister, and blind faith to a religious order is literally never good in fiction.
Right.
Like, there was no way this wasn't going to be subverted and actually, you know, it's evil.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this was frustrating too.
Yeah. Yeah. But we learned about his role in this. He's an apostle, and apostle is their euphemism for assassin. Like, he is an agent that is kind of sent out. They're sending him east to Mercuria, kind of to this front in the Azadi War, to help them, you know, to help them kind of deal the death blow to these rebel pagans by
fighting something called Scorpion.
Yes, we need you to deal with this demon that wears human clothes named the Scorpion, and you will convert them by killing them. So there is no shade to this whatsoever.
Nope. And as soon as he leaves, they like turn to each other and like, to evil.
Yeah.
You know, they basically just, mask off.
Bam. Well, it's like the scene in Austin Powers where they're doing the evil laugh, but nobody in the scene knows when it's going to cut away. So they just keep on restarting it.
It's very similar to that.
Yeah.
Moving over to what is my least favorite chapter in the game.
Yeah.
And I thought that the last one would be.
Mm-hmm.
Or last favorite, two least favorite chapters, because we're going to do two really long stealth sequences in these two chapters. This is Alchira. So you wake up in the Fringe just really quickly. You know, Charlie's here. Like, you've been here all night. You've been drugged. You know, there's no reason why Marcus drugged you instead of killing you. We don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You go outside. Olivia calls you and says, "Hey, I decrypted some of Reza's notes. He might have been in Japan investigating Wadi Corp.
Mm-hmm.
That dead girl you found in the apartment was from Wadi. So go to Japan."
Right. So she's going to be in transit while we shift focus over to April and Mercuria. This whole chapter. So, like, you know, I did a little bit of math looking at a fact, just kind of like, okay, like, I'm going to see what the word count is in these different chapters. Chapter 5, it shifts between characters a bunch. And overall, this is 25% of the game.
It's crazy.
Chapter 5. Yeah.
Like it goes on forever.
Yes.
Like, every single one of these sequences drags infinitely.
Yep.
And this stuff, I mean, I know we said this in generalities. It's just worth, you know, and I am serious about wanting to pick up the pace a little bit.
Yeah.
I cannot care less about April and the Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've done nothing to make me care about this.
Right.
It's not interesting. It doesn't have the same scale or relatability as the other story does.
It's talked to simultaneously in too much detail, but with no actual emphasis on the parts of it that are important.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we know, like, we know too much about their operation, but none of the important things.
And none of the interesting things.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Interesting, relevant detail is a huge problem with this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there should be something that fires the imagination.
Yeah.
About this. Like those little flower devices.
Yeah.
You know, which is a mystery that maintains in the, you know, the Stark plot.
Mm-hmm. That just does not carry forward to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here we're getting a lot of character and plot arcs
mm-hmm.
that don't do anything.
Right.
Just to do them real quick, what we're getting is Bryn is upset because you're not taking him because you saved his life. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of talk about once you save a boy's life, you're their family.
Right.
This does not pay off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to sneak up to spy on this tower. The Zadi are building a big evil tower.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it by, to me, I fought a guard by the scaffolding. You might be able to sneak past him. I don't know.
Yeah, I stuck around behind him and choked him out.
Yeah, I got caught. I fought him. He kept calling for help, but help never came.
Mm.
You climb up the scaffolding, and this is the first time where you have to use the scan mode.
Mm-hmm.
To do something, and the game had not taught you how to do this
right
up until this point, which is very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing the game needs you to do that doesn't tell you how to do is check your email.
Mm-hmm.
Both those things are required for puzzles, and yes. There's no tutorializing of them at all.
Not at all. Yeah. But the eavesdropping that you do, you are eavesdropping on a conversation between the kind of just emissary who is ruling over this place, you know, just the mm-hmm. governor that the Azadi have put in. And she is talking to this obviously sinister black robed prophet who's kind of only speaking in whispers. We only hear one side of the conversation, and they're talking about the preparations that they're doing for this inauguration that is happening with the tower, this absurdly tall tower that stretches like up into the sky and like curves like with the atmosphere. Like it's real big. They're obviously yeah. doing hubristic things here. We never learn who the prophet is or what they want in this game.
Yeah.
So,
yep. You follow them back. Thankfully, this is not a stealth, stay close, but not too close sequence, which I was fully expecting.
Mm-hmm.
You follow them all the way back to the inn. When you go to the inn, Benrime says nobody like that came in. You go check the basement. You go into the magical tunnel that you came through following him. Right. Now we switch back to Zoe. She's in Wadi City in Japan.
Right. You know, she gets here, and the static is so bad that her phone connection to Liv is, too choppy, for her to really get any real information other than to learn that she is looking for a Wadi employee named Damian Kavanaugh. This was another one of Reza's sources.
Yes. So you have to get to the campus. The only way to get through that is the museum, which is open on Sunday, but the ticket booth is closed on Sunday
mm-hmm.
and the automatic ticket machine is broken.
Right.
So you can kind of do a little bit of weird, light puzzling here with a guy mm-hmm. who thinks his girlfriend stood him up. get his ticket. You can also, his girlfriend shows up eventually and you can get her ticket to give to a little girl to reunite them with their family. This is purely optional and does nothing.
Yes. Yeah.
He rips up his ticket. You get both halves of it and then you stick it together with a sticker from gum is how I did it.
Oh yeah. I didn't realize you could get a sticker to put them together. I got the torn ticker, but the torn ticket, but I thought that I failed. I thought that it wasn't useful. So I had both tickets. I could have helped the girl go meet with her friends and family, but I didn't. So, yeah. Oh, well,
cause fuck it. Social distancing. don't want to get sick.
Yeah.
So you get in here to this museum section, which I like this. I like this in a video game, like a museum in a video game. One of my favorite, like museums and amusement parks.
Yep.
You know, some of my favorite zones.
Yes.
And there are jokes to this. It's not a very funny game whatsoever. And Crow is really not funny at all.
Right.
But this is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So like you learn that like Wati's first bot, you know, first bot that they released, and Wati's been around for like 200 years. Like this is unfathomable. But like it was called Bunny Bot. It was 3 meters tall and weighed 300 kilograms.
So much. Like, oh God.
Yeah. And it was meant for children to play with. So,
yeah.
The original Watilla, was pretty much perfect. Everybody agree, but it wet itself randomly.
Yeah, because they thought that kids would appreciate it, you know, which is a real thing that happens with dolls.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you ever see those children's dolls?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
It's so fucking weird. Like, little girls, are you okay? Like,
I've got concerns about the way they're being socialized.
Yeah. It's super weird.
Yeah.
And then my favorite one, though, is the little big cat cartoon that they have that ended with this child murderer killing, boiling, and eating little big cat. And it's presented in a neutral museum voice that's very funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But the primary thing is, you know, this is a museum to Wadi's past, but we learn that they've got this new project that's about to be announced called Project Alchera, something like that.
So you have to get in. The way you do it is whenever you touch one of the displays, an alarm goes off. The guard has to come over. Mm-hmm. And whenever you go to try to call your friend to hack the door, the staff door, the guard comes over as well. So you have to kind of multitask him by bribing this little kid with gum to cause a distraction for you.
Right.
And now we're in the shit show, man. You put on this maintenance worker disguise, and it is now time for a series of stealth Wadi sections through dark gray corridors for literal forever.
Yes,
for the rest of time,
dashing from nook to nook, hoping that the game is accurately portraying which parts of the floor are no-go zones, because boy, that laser was real inaccurate. I got caught when I was not touching the laser, Gary.
Yeah. It's a real huge bummer.
This very slipshod.
Yeah.
Like it's fun, you know, talking your way past the executive here and like getting it. Like there's a fun little bit when you're in the elevator and, you know, it's you're in there for an awkwardly long amount of time and you're both trying to start up a conversation, but it's not happening.
Yeah. That's cute.
Yes.
You get past these laser scanner drone things that suck to get to the office of, you know, Reza's contact, Damien.
Right.
You get to him and we start talking to Damien, and I have a big problem with Damien in this. I had like got immediate like, oh, they're trying to Hugh Grant him, or like the boyfriend in Bridesmaids.
Yes.
Of Kristen Wiig or something like that. And they do. Like, I was like, hopefully they're subverting that. They're certainly not. And lo and behold, at some point, Love Theme from Dreamfall shows up. a song with regrettable vocals, like a trip wave, you know, like song with vocals about their romance. And my eyes, previously they had rolled really far back in their head and now they went back to normal, but they did a full 360.
Yeah.
Through the back of my brain.
No, I couldn't get over how much Damien looked like they just modeled Neil Patrick Harris's head.
It does. It's like British Neil Patrick Harris. Like, it's really weird and just impossibly like charming and like sweet. You know, this is, and like, I get like the idea of something for mommy, right? Like, I'm not trying to say, you know, oh, it sucks because it's a guy trying to appeal to a lady protagonist.
No,
it sucks because it's a shitty character and you fall in plot love like pretty quick.
Yeah.
For no real reason.
Right.
You know,
Yeah.
This game has some weird gender stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
In kind of a general sense, I feel like.
But by talking to Damien, we learn that the deceased friend or the deceased woman in Reza's apartment was named Rio. And this flower device is Project Alchera. It is something that they're calling the Dreamer. You know, so it's like, yeah, we're working on the Dreamer. It's going to be this new thing that supplants all other entertainment in the world, basically by allowing people to lucid dream by connecting to this collective unconscious called the DreamNet. Not Hypnospace, the DreamNet.
Yeah, very similar. even though supplanting all entertainment in the world is a big claim because you don't sleep all the time.
Yes, there's a good amount of time where I'm awake where I want to be entertained.
Yeah. And I don't like naps. I understand some people do.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea that people are just going to nap for 8 hours a day and then sleep for 8 hours a day seems ambitious on behalf of Wadi Corp. Not and saying also, that a lucid dreaming device isn't appealing if it wasn't evil.
Right. But, right. Yeah. No. And also like the fact that it's like a flower that comes out, that it's like a literal lotus eating machine.
Yeah. That sucks your face.
Yeah.
Like it is a flower that sucks the dick of your face. When you put it on your Roomba.
It sucks. Why'd you say that like in Italian? It sucks in the dick out of your face.
Sucks in the dick out of your face. Out of your face. Because we're 2.5 hours in and we're less than halfway through the game and I'm sweaty. I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, Gary, we're an hour and 50 minutes in.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
It feels like... But I think this will be a hard sell for people, I guess, is my point. People love having something covering their breathing apparatus during sleep.
Yeah. You know? It's a... It also
all
like
the people with the sleep apnea Bane masks are kings in this new world.
Yeah. It's like, so is the Dreamer just unavailable if you stomach sleep? What about us stomach sleepers, Gary? Come on.
Nope, you're fucked.
Stomach
sleeper, a side sleeper, it's a little difficult,
mm-hmm.
You know? But stomach sleepers don't deserve dreams in general.
No,
so
no.
They just second class citizens. Second class sleepizens.
Oh, jeez. But, you know, just like... this DreamNet is seen to be the source of this kind of contamination, something leaked out into the broader network, and that is what the media is referring to as the static.
It's also Damien and Rio find out that this was not about entertainment, it was about spying and mind control.
Yes, of course.
So they decided to blow the whistle to Reza. Because he's a good whistleblowing guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now Zoe is all in on helping disrupt Wadi's plan. Like, I do want to find my friend, but also this is evil. Let's do it. So now, again, this fucking sucks.
Mm-hmm.
We had to gather evidence, which means that you're going to have to go through this really, really long section through the Wadi like subsystems through here. And this is just an infinitely long busy work section. The framing here, again, framing device on framing device,
mm-hmm.
is him having briefed you on your like Ocean's 11 plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you complete a part, you flash back to the briefing.
Yeah.
You know, so you get to a part, he's like, make sure you get the security card,
uh-huh.
and then make sure you get the security card updated with the data file.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and do that. And he goes, all right, now you need to avoid the spider bots. The spider bots going to patrol of this, this, and this.
And
you do that. It's like, the door will only stay open for this long.
You know? That is a structure that you adopt in film to add propulsion to a very complicated thing to show, just like to follow this very nimble through line and kind of just set you up, hold your breath, and then you get a resolution because there's another part of the plan that goes along, and to have it be so that you're not having the plan explained to you and then seeing it executed in painstaking detail, like right after that. It was explained to you, then they did it. It's a way to compress it. Nothing is compressed here.
Well, usually they do it in voiceover.
Yes.
Like they actually happen simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but here we had to cut back to like 60 seconds of watching Zoe listening,
mm-hmm.
like in between things. The visual excitement of somebody listening to something.
Yeah.
While wearing a disguise. It takes forever.
There are so many steps to it. And ultimately what you're trying to do is implant this literal worm. It's like a little mechanical worm into this huge organic thing, the Dream Core, which looks like a Final Fantasy XII like summon tumor in a tank that is multiple stories high.
Yep. So you sneak past them to get to the port to deploy worm. When you do, the CEO of Wadi, Miss Gilmore, comes in to check in. You've already, fucked out of there. But we're now staying with her talking with these two scientists.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the core, which they call Angena, which I had a real, this whole game has this feeling to me, but I had a, something that gets really annoying to me is writing that is like real, real clever, clever.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look up what Angena is, but I'm sure it is the, you know, Mesopotamian name for the goddess of dreams or some horseshit.
Yeah.
And when people do cutesy stunts like that, I get pretty annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I understand people who like the literary Mad Libs. You know, literary word find of listening to this stuff and being like, you know, I know what the River Leith is, but go fuck yourself. And also game designers, stop doing that.
Yes.
It's annoying.
Angena is a creator goddess in Australian Aboriginal mythology.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be something like that. And that stuff's not cute.
Mm-hmm.
So the core is expanding. You know, there's more data inside of it than we can contain.
Mm-hmm.
The boss here is a real Devil Wears Prada kind of thing.
Yes.
Like she's like a real unnecessary ball buster.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really understand why she's so like pointlessly cruel. Again, mm-hmm. everyone who has a cameo in this game plays it to the fucking backseats.
Yeah. Yeah. And she, you know, she's got plots going on, like the turn at the end of this or the reveal where she betrays Mojo. It's just really, and the fact that she's like physically identical to the emissary, is weird to me.
It's gotta mean something.
Yeah.
Right? I think like, I mean, there's something there, like they, Bryn introduced himself as Worm.
Yeah.
When he fucked things up, like there's some kind of parallel going on here, but
like they've not established that there's like twinners or anything. Like there's no Dark Tower, like talisman thing going on here.
Yeah, I'm not motivated to figure it out.
No. And like what I am motivated about is this gigantic like organic hard drive that they have that is interfacing with mechanics with electronics and stuff. Like, I don't know, that's cool. Maybe give me more of that, please.
All of this stuff, all the things that Wadi Corp is doing is at least like, it's pretty boilerplate to do the dream control thing, but it's at least, you know, interesting. And because we've just got to a reveal with that, it means it's time to switch over to April's shitty walking tour of like baby's first D&D setting.
Because like she's gone through the magical tunnel into the underground city and she's tailing the prophet who has ridden the only boat across, so you've got to find another way around.
Which is to get into this temple. Really annoyingly, when we were here with Zoe, we could see this door but could not interact or even comment on it. You know, so you go here though, and you actually, get into that building. You have to sneak in behind a goblin. You can't open it.
Right.
And now we are in another stealth section.
Mm-hmm.
So we had just done one of these, like this just feels like, you know, they should have known better. Right.
Yeah.
Very similar, you know, popping, you know, ducking into alcoves, nooks, crannies, all mm-hmm. those things. If you like them, you would like
behind
this
rubble.
Game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of rubble, to, avoid these like bigger goblin monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Here, in order to unlock this section in the catacombs, hit these four statues with the correct symbol in order to get this clockwork egg, which we've seen provide power.
Yes.
Which gets us into another gate.
We're skipping over this. There's so much that you have to do to make this happen. You know, you are crisscrossing this entire stealth tunnel area, this catacomb.
It is not a puzzle.
No,
it does not have puzzle feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this does get you out on the other side of the river. You see the prophet talking to some of the larger beasts and like having them guard his back trail. And you think, OK, cool, I'm going to go find the prophet. Nah, not really.
Yeah.
You sneak past him and get to like this whirling vortex, you know, like where the prophet disappeared through. And, you know, as she is buffeted by whatever the vortex is made of, she comments, she says like, oh, it's like a million voices, dreams trapped, stored, almost as though it's in a gigantic tank in a biological hard drive called Angena.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. You touch it, it flares up. We switch back to Zoe. She has to escape because the core goes on lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because they've just found her or the worm. Eye patrols pop in. You have to rush. They split up, but you have to go into an alcove.
Mm-hmm.
And get back to the elevator. The elevator also tells you to find April, save April, and now it is added, save me.
Missing Griddler, need Griddler. Yes.
Find save Griddler, Griddler, save Griddler. which enters into chapter 6, Morpheus, which begins good, and then again, we're back in the shit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we start off in this greenhouse.
Right, you know, like the elevator that you got into leads to the greenhouse where Mojo's at.
Yes. Yeah. And we go through this beautiful greenhouse to see this gigantic, it looks like Mojo from the X-Men. Google image search him.
Yeah.
In a tub of machinery with big sagging titties like Mojo has.
Yes.
And I think this is a cool voice performance and a creepy idea.
Yeah. Well, the fact that, you know, he is plugged into this net, he sees everything that is happening, and DreamNet has allowed him to, you know, to see everything. And he uses that to put you off balance. Like he talks about, like, okay, so Reza, like when you were plugged into this, I was able to get off on experiencing the dream memory of you and Reza having sex. Like, that's a really creepy thing for this huge monster to say. And it kind of reveals just how not great all of this, you know, like this particular technology is. Like, it's good. Yeah. Conceptually, good and creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. Good and creepy. He also kind of talks about how he can't see into your dreams. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't actually mind control you. And they don't know why.
Right.
You know, maybe you're connected to the girl who's destroying the web. We don't know. And you try to leave. He's like, no, you're going to stay here and I'm going to get through to you. I'm going to run experiments with you.
Yeah.
And the twins arrive, like his little creatures that he controls.
Right.
He starts talking about how he created Wadi Corporation. So this is like the founder.
Yeah.
You know, this evil blob. Mm-hmm. And then you escape to the roof and ride a cleaning drone down to the street level.
Right. Another detail that came out in this, he tells you that, like, oh yes, you know, we harvested all of Reza's dreams, you know, and he's dead. Yeah. Basically we used
and you don't believe it, you know, but he's not actually dead. They just stole his brain and they're gonna stick somebody else in his brain.
Right.
All right, now we're in Mercuria. Fucking Mercuria.
Hey Gary, what's happening in Mercuria?
I cannot wait to find out. We're in a lot of Mercuria now.
So April talks to Naane, her magic tiger stripe friend, you know, and kind of gets up to speed on what the Azadi and the underground people seem to be up to. Like, hey, they like all of this stuff has to be connected. The underground people are never brought up again. So
yeah, well, I don't know what these goblins are.
No.
When you talk to her, she says, like, you need to talk to the Guardian of Balance. She's like, well, I can't shift. And Benrime says, you can go talk to the White Dragon, which is always called like the White Dratkin.
Yes.
Which drives me nuts. I know that's from the first game and stuff.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. Yeah. You know, and you have to head out there. And then who comes in but Brian Westhouse to like just chew the scenery. And, you know, you get a lot of opportunity to catch up on Brian Westhouse. What's he's been up to? You get to find out a lot about what he's been up to.
Remember this guy from one scene in the first game and one scene here? No, I don't.
No.
Do you want to watch him be loudly genial?
No.
He's been wandering, like, you know, like after the events of the first game, he sobered up and he started just kind of going and seeing what Arcadia had to offer to him.
He sobered up in a way that I felt was disrespectful to alcoholics.
Yeah.
Because the version of sobering up in this is just chose to drink less, but he still drank because he's here to get wine. You know, that malt, the famous mulled wine. But it's like, that's not how alcoholism works.
Nope.
Like, you don't just decide, like, I can just have a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's the opposite of what alcoholism is.
All I needed was to want to fix the problem.
You know, it's very, very fucking weird.
Yeah.
And he mentions, he's like, okay, well, if you need to get to the White Dragon, everything is like a step. Because you can't just go talk to the Guardian of Balance. You have to talk to the White Dragon. And to do that, you have to talk to the Dark People's Library.
It's the malediction prophecy, man.
It's really malediction prophecy going on here.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get into the library. And the library itself is cool.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. And on your way there, you get flagged down by Roper Clax, who is the evil wizard from the first one, who is selling his wares at this table illicitly. And this is kind of cute.
Yep.
You know, I think this is kind of funny. He does a support group to stop being an evil wizard. Mm-hmm. He talks about his book that he wrote. And it's like there's only one copy left because he was trying not to do magic in it, but put in a charm that blows up the book once you get to a certain page. Right. I think that's cute. Uh-huh. You know, speed, but for books.
Yep.
You know, speed reading, you know, speed reading. Like, and if you get to that certain page, the book blows up.
Kaboom.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of into that.
Yeah.
the explosion at the end of this book.
Yeah. But he's here selling like potions and stuff. That's going to be important, important later on. And yeah. I like how uncomfortable April is, because like she trapped him in a, you can ask him like, hey, you know, so I trapped you in a calculator. Like, how'd you get out? He's like, oh, I had to teach myself advanced trigonometry. It was like, yeah, oh,
it took 5 years,
but I learned a lot about myself. It's fun.
Yeah. This is cute. Like, this is good dialogue.
Yeah.
It's cute. He says the Shadow Man ship is down on the docks. You go there. The Shadow Men are, you know, like the Omar or something from Invisible War, like third person emotionless guys. And their whole thing is their little like canticle for Leibowitz. You know, they document knowledge, but do not partake in it.
Yes, they do. They do not create. They only archive, and kind of their mythology is, you know, once we have collected everything, then we will be able to sleep.
Yeah, they have a hive mind. They can talk to each other by just like closing their eyes or whatever.
Right.
These things are pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, though, again, that conservation of detail thing fucks up any kind of puzzle solving, because they just said they collect books. A character just mandatorily dropped into conversation. They had the only existing copy of a book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is, it's just, there's no eureka.
Nope.
You know, you gave me the solution, then you gave me the puzzle. Like, all you did was swap the order. There's no intuition required. So you go grab the book, he just gives it to you, and then you, that book will be enough to get you on the ship. And we're going through that really fast, but it's lots of back and forth.
Yes.
Lots of circular dialogue.
Yeah. We cut briefly to Zoe, with Damien in Damien's apartment. Like, they talk about like, oh, you know, is Reza really dead or not? Damien says, it's, you know, it's rumored that like Alvin Peetz, like nobody knows how he died. He just kind of disappeared. It's possible that he just figured out how to extend his life, and that thing you saw was what, you know, was him, but he, then, you know, that would make him hundreds of years old at this point. And like, they're doing an awful lot of like, their face gets close enough for them to kiss, but then like, oh, I'm flustered. You know, just regular
flirting,
boilerplate.
Hey, I guess I can go find a hotel. Oh no, you don't need to find a hotel, love. you know, I'll sleep on the floor. Well, you don't have to sleep on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that. And it's,
yeah.
This is before they actually like make out.
Yeah. And at this point I'm thinking this romance is good and all, but what's going on with Kia and Gary?
I can't wait to find out about the immortal leader of this company who has become a dreamomancer, a neuromancer,
a morphomancer.
What's happening with a fourth tier companion character from Jade Empire? So let's go back to Kian. And what they're trying to do is have you play both sides of this.
Yeah.
Which in theory, you know, again, Indigo Prophecy shades, right? Like, it's kind of interesting, the idea of playing the cat and the mouse.
Yeah.
But the cat is so shitty that at no point do I want the cat to win. There's a part where you switch back and forth between controlling both of them, and my loyalties are not divided at this point, you know?
Right.
So you arrive at the Azadi Tower. You speak to the emissary, who again is like the Wadi CEO, which is really weird.
Right.
You know, your idea, your task here is to work against the terrorist and help convert the conversation. But the emissary doesn't trust you and sends Commander Vaman to follow you.
Right.
And that's going to pay off later.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Yeah. And now we have moved on to chapter 7. The entire back half of this game is just a hallway. There's no real there's no puzzle that really happens. There's not even like sniffing out the gas cans to figure out which one will let you make a torch.
Your sniffing days are over.
Your sniffing days are over, Selma.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's nothing going on here. We're in plot hallway, malediction prophecy plot hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So April, you arrive at the Shadow Man Swamp, which I love the concept of the Shadow Man has mentioned.
Yep. Well, so this isn't just a swamp; like, it is a floating city that is made of
organic
trees.
Library.
Yeah,
yeah, that has bookshelves carved into the trees. Like, this is great.
Yeah,
that's a cool setting. I wish we got more of these guys.
It's a fucking bummer that this entire level is just the Shadow Man saying, "Follow me," and then you like run on some pathways through like three or four loading screens until you get to the hallway. Hey, let me show you some cool vistas that our artists made. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Take the pathway to the hallway. That'll lead to the corridor.
If you reach the thoroughfare, you've gone too far.
So when you get here, we run into Crow, and you talk to him, and
I was very... so ready for this to be like, I fucking love Crow, man. Crow's so good.
I was expecting Crow to be a lot better than Crow was.
Yeah.
And a lot of this, not only is Crow lifeless now, but April is as well.
Yeah.
Like, one of the weird things about April's writing is that she exhibits like zero emotional intelligence,
mm-hmm.
Which is not true of her in the first game. Like, she cannot grok that Brynn has this attachment to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's constantly asking her friends, like, what's up with Brynn? And people are having to explain to her. And then she goes up to Crow and she's like, what's up, Crow? And he's like, hey, you abandoned me.
Yeah.
You know,
like, and we were traveling together, and then for no reason, you disappeared for 8 years.
Yeah. And you can't react to this appropriately.
No.
Like, the joke is just like, oh, Crow. You know, it's kind of what you do. And he goes along with it. He's like, oh, I can't stay mad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gives you a little hug and stuff. But it's not, it's just very weird.
Yeah.
To me. And we've also entered the part of the game now where the weird horny gender stuff happens.
Yep, because we get the Drake Ken of the White.
Yep. Which is something for daddy.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's also like when Zoe is in the snow realm as well,
mm-hmm.
she appears in the snow realm in panties and like co-ed undershirt.
She's just wearing like a teddy kind of, I don't know.
Yeah. We get real something for daddy.
Yeah.
From here. And Crow makes a lot of something for daddy jokes as well, which I don't remember Crow being as horny, but that could have been me.
Right.
Half years ago, not having my horny dar set quite so sensitively, you know.
But like the idea is, so the white dragon is the only one who was left, like in the longest journey, the original white dragon died and April helps the new one be born. And like the balance mm-hmm. between these dragons is real important. Right now, all of the other dragons are dead and something is hunting the dragons. So, you know, White needs to, you know, put herself in a human form, and she chooses just a scantily clad blonde lady.
Victoria's Secret model.
Yeah.
I'll be inconspicuous and hot.
Yeah.
And you know, something hunting the last of the dragons, like all that stuff sounds pretty cool. We're not going to hang out with that or anything. So she gives you exposition. She teaches mm-hmm. you, kind of helps you remember how to shift very momentarily.
Yeah. And she's basically like, oh, you know, like you never lost the power. You were just afraid. And then you decide you didn't want to. Like, once you're a shifter, you're always a shifter. But like now that all the pieces are back together. So now that Crow's back, there's going to be a rumble.
You open a portal to the Guardian Realm.
Right.
And there's tons of exposition here. Again, this is long and boring.
Mm-hmm.
We get this brief aside with Zoe, where Damien says that the Dream Med is expanding to the greater web.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe wants to go into the Dreamer and find April and learn about what's happening. And Damien's like, you know, you can't do that. Like, I can't let you go. I know we're new. And you're like, well, I feel like I'd like to get to know you better after this is all over. Here's a little something so you don't forget me.
Yeah.
And then you make out, and again, like, some you have it in the notes as something from Owl City.
Mm-hmm.
I can only think of Owl City as that like Fireflies song.
Yeah,
this is slightly less twee than that. It's got a real to me it felt like a little bit like a song you'd put on headphones and listen to in Life is Strange or something.
Yeah,
like
that's
real
still pretty fucking twee, man.
no it's real, it's like soft like twee, not like and Fireflies.
Yeah.
Like that song is very major key. This is like a minor key, sexy trip hop anthem. It sucks though. It's horrible music.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, why is there romance in this? Like mm-hmm. you just met this person. You just met a mojo and had the two psychotic, like I know this is a harp I play a lot, but like it's not time.
Yeah.
To meet people. Like the idea that like I'm gonna do a little bit of like dating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm gonna get in some courtship while I solve this worldwide conspiracy is really obnoxious to me.
Mm-hmm.
There are stakes and there's stuff going on.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like I don't know, filmmakers didn't necessarily learn this for a very long time, and game makers took a long time too. Like a romantic plot subplot is not it's not like mandatory. Like there's no governing body that will like punish you for not doing that. Like,
it's
something that a studio, like a Hollywood studio, would say, you gotta have some action. You gotta have some smooches up in this piece or else nobody's going to buy it. But like, that's a compromise that seems like Turnquist built in because like, I don't know, this is a thing that movies do. So let's put it in.
Yeah. Well, and like, there's two things with that. Like, one is that like a subplot in a game like this is really, really detrimental anyway, because yeah. a huge lack of focus is a big problem. Subplots are not great in movies regardless.
Yeah.
Like, those are a dated kind of concept. I feel yeah. like modern movies have, like, the style at the time is much more focused. Gone are the days where, like, oh, there's a jewelry heist that is also happening. You know, whether it's romance or not, like, that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
The other thing is, the video game version of that studio meddling you're talking about is what got us the stealth sections and combat sections.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to also make the narrative. I guarantee that a game publisher was not saying, you got to have some kisses in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was 2006. This isn't 2020 where it's like, you have to be able to fuck an elf,
yeah.
you know, to sell your game. Like, this is not the style at the time.
Right.
So it just, it's egregious
yeah.
And superfluous and mm-hmm. all kinds of words that are like non-additive and just weird and a bad soundtrack and laughable.
Yeah. Like, well, and then like Zoe goes to sleep and Damien disappears from the story. And as yeah, far Damien, as
existed to, yeah, to give her to suck the dick on her face with a flower organic thing and then be gone. Because yeah. if you remember, Zoe is telling this from a $1 million baby perspective.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, we know this romance won't pay off. Is the idea that it's a little bit more tragic that she's in a coma because she had this budding love mm-hmm. for the guy that she met, you know, roughly 8 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
but so sloppy and just like big puke energy mm. from me on this bad boy.
Yeah, it's yeah. it's not great. So she yeah. goes back to sleep and she's gonna make her way in. April gets to the Guardian Realm. This, you know, this is a big thing from the first game, like reassembling Gordon to yeah. become the Guardian, you know, the new person who will act as like the you know, the traffic guard for the balance between Stark and Arcadia. That was a big thing in that. Here we go see him. He has assembled a screensaver for you to navigate yeah. and he is Dr. Manhattan floating in the middle of it.
Yep. And you catch up on this guy.
Yeah
You know, he says that I maintain this balance, but dreams are higher than my authority.
Right.
Those interface with the fabric of reality, and the balance is actually fine, but dreams are passing between Stark and Arcadia, or from right. Stark to Arcadia,
mm-hmm.
but not the other way around. So right. that's not really, like, he says, like, the balance is okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the balance. It's about this dream thing.
Yeah.
Then you say, like, you bring up, like, I just don't know what I'm doing. And he's like, your role is about to come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else is going to set this right. And right. you have a hard time with this. You know, he says, like, be free and let go of your past.
Right. You know, and April's like, you know, everybody is constantly riding my dick about how, you know, like, how directionless I am, you know, just yeah. like I have, you know, how I'm kind of just going through the motions here. And, you know, like, people, you know, if not before, like, after this, are going to say, like, yeah, April, you want to die, don't you? Like, you just have this death wish and you're leading people into death as part of this, you know, revolution. And she says, like, yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of a son of a bitch being the chosen one and then just being dropped because your purpose has stopped. And, like, that could be a cool thing for them to do. It's just like they step on every single rake on the way to getting to that. And it's not supported
by the text.
Right.
Like, if that's something that April felt when somebody showed up in her world and told her that there was a dream girl
yep.
telling her things, she would have leapt on it like somebody, like, you know, leaping on.
I'm a protagonist yeah. again. Let's I'm do back, it.
Baby. Yeah. Instead of being like, no, I've retired.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's the opposite. Like, she yeah. goes from being, you know, Snake in the beginning of Metal Gear Solid to missing,
mm-hmm.
you know, his hero, to being Raiden.
Yeah.
Partway through this, of like wanting to be the child soldier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like this was paid off. Like, that is a compelling story. Like, what do you do when you're no longer the protagonist?
Yeah.
That's not April
yep.
in this. And the idea that, like, hey, you're just leading these people to death, it's a death wish. I never got the impression that April didn't legitimately care about the rebel cause.
Yeah.
You know, those are real people with real lives and stuff. There's actually is a lower level non-cosmic plot that's happening. It's mm-hmm. one I think is really boring, but that doesn't mean the characters would think it was boring mm-hmm. if they live in it.
She cares about their well-being. Like, a lot of the, yeah. you know, hemming and hawing and back and forth that she does talking about the supply lines is like, we need to protect people.
Yeah. When going back to save, like, Benrime
yeah.
and shit like that later, like, this is just inconsistent characterization.
Yeah.
You know, and it just has that lack of focus and, like, just trying to do so many fucking things.
Yeah.
rearing its ugly head here. So we grab Crow. You know, he jokes about like, oh, we did it. Let's go back and warp back. You know, we talked about Crow. The timing on all the jokes don't work because mm-hmm. We had to sit there and like the camera switches to him and then we wait him say the complete sentence. And then mm-hmm. There's like a second long beat. And then we go to the reaction. It's real weird.
Yeah.
Zoe goes into the dreamer, gets the flower, is woken up in the Winterland. You know, the angry child is like, April Wine must be saved. And you're like, I tried to. She doesn't want to be. Mm-hmm. And you get dropped through the ice.
Yeah. And we are back at this chapter 8 convergence, where
is going to come together.
Yep, all of our plot lines and all of our main characters are going to cross each other
in the clumsiest way possible. So all of you Key and Zoe shippers finally get the payoff that you've been waiting for.
Which is weird because Kian is canonically gay, and that's just something that Turnquist explained in a blog post.
Oh, that's a real J.K. Rowling kind of thing.
Yeah.
Cool. Good. I mean, he's doing it even before Rowling did it.
Whenever somebody says JK, I think maybe they're going to finish it with Simmons and then they finish it with Rowling. And it's like, fuck.
JK Simmons might have said that. Like, he might have come out and told us that Dumbledore was gay. Well, here's the thing. Dumbledore was gay.
Bring me pictures of Dumbledore kissing a dude.
Bring me Mapplethorpes of Dumbledore.
Dumbledore. Oh God, you're giving me hiccups, Gary. Oh Jesus.
Bring me pictures of Dumbledore kissing a guy. Pounding on desk.
I was a lady killer, so
Jesus. Yeah. So we're back as Keon. And mm-hmm. Of course he's fighting.
Yeah.
Doing some dock fighting as he does. And then, you know, he corners this merchant. He kills the rebels that were supporting him and then interrogates this merchant who, again, like every side character in this really fucking gets a lot of lines and plays them big.
Yeah.
He's talking about the scorpion. This captain interrupts, you know, saying like, hey, this witch was caught in Old Town. You know, maybe that's your
yeah, scorpion. Maybe this is something you, Inquisitor, would be interested in, this witch who showed up out of nowhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he says, you take care of this guy. You know, we cut over to April. April finds out that the witch, you know, the Zoe has been kept at Friar's Keep. Yeah. And she, again, even though like her plot, we were just told like she doesn't want to be the protagonist. Mm-hmm. She has to be convinced to go help Zoe.
Yeah.
Like she's like, I'm not doing that. And I'm like, what? Who are you? Like, what is your actual motivation? So her friends have to tell her like, hey, that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, didn't you just go talk to the Guardian and the Guardian told you to not do protagonist shit?
Yeah.
Like what is happening? Like, what is your attitude towards doing protagonist shit, Zoe, or April? And what is the game's attitude towards it? Because the Guardian of Balance, which seems like, you know, a character of wisdom.
Yeah, it seems like somebody you would probably value their input.
Yeah, is the idea that that's bullshit? And you, if you want to be the pro, like, what is your message? Right. Like, is the idea that if you, you know, if you want to do the protagonist things, you do it? Because April gets stabbed and thrown into a lake at the end of this for doing it. So she's punished, but she had to go save Zoe.
Yeah.
So like, you know, April, Zoe does very little saving of April.
Mm-hmm.
April does a lot of saving of Zoe.
Yeah.
It's confused. This is a sloppy fucking narrative.
It's a mess. It's a mess.
Yeah. Absolute mess. So we go to Kian, who goes to Friar's Keep and questions Zoe, with this like fucking stock comedy bureaucrat character that is so out of place for where we're at in the plot and like how much urgency we have right now.
Yeah. It's like, yes, if you want to open the door, then you need to requisition 3 forms and a triplicate and then bring it to the blur. Like,
yeah. What game am I playing? Mm-hmm. Like, it just fucking A.
I mean, like this is something from the first third of The Longest Journey. Like,
yes.
when Arcadia had like flavor to it and when the stakes were not this high.
It's very weird. And he works for the evil empire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not just like, so anyway, and Zoe at this point is still doing the, like, I don't know how I got here, you know, stuff. And it's like this is the fulcrum on which Zoe gets a little tiresome to me, mm-hmm. where like she stops like interrogating her circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Like she has a reason to be here.
Yes.
She willingly went here and she's acting like it's like a different leftover from a different draft where she just fell asleep and ended up here again or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's really weird.
Yeah. You just like, and it's not her being obfuscating, right? Like she's not just like, oh,
she's not
I don't
particularly guileful.
I don't know. Yeah. You know, like she, yeah. and whenever she tries to trick people, she doesn't, but this is just
really
her.
Lying, yeah.
Yeah. This is just her like forfeiting any like objective or direction and what she's trying to do here. And then like, she's like, all right, well, I've got no objective other than like getting out of here. So
yeah.
Whatever then, but yeah. something about her performance is enough to like make Kian say like, okay, she's not a witch. Like she probably doesn't deserve to be in this dungeon. She definitely doesn't deserve to be shipped off to the capital city to get a show trial and be executed. But like, we yep. can't get her out of here.
Yep. And the clerk says, no, that's not how this works. This is supposed to be the beginning of Kian's redemption arc.
Right. Right.
You know, whatever. April bumps into Kian on the way out of the keep and the conversation becomes this argument. April, for somebody who is like running the, you know, the rebel forces, is also not very good about keeping her feelings on Backstreet. You would think that the way to hide from this would be to be loyal and not just be a propagandist for the rebel cause.
Yeah.
Like to the apostle. And the dialogue here is so sloppy. Mm-hmm. Like this is so the writer just talking about, you know, the Iraq occupation or any kind right. of occupation mm-hmm. in this way that is like so clumsily transparent.
It's just anti-imperialist, anti-colonialist, which like I'm down with, but like, I don't know, maybe do it justice. Maybe
this flavor of it is so obvious as so much that it doesn't need to be said.
Right. Yes.
Almost like it just like, mm-hmm. who are you arguing against?
And nobody's against on the Kian, other side of this issue.
Like, yeah. Except for Kian, who uh-huh. is like, you know, I respect you, but I disagree. Like mm-hmm. We're trying to save you. We did all this stuff. You can be grateful. And she's like, you know, don't confuse gratitude for affection,
love.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. For love, you know, which is a fine sentiment, but she just delivers the one of the themes, the sub themes mm-hmm. here. And you would not know it, but this is the fulcrum on which Kian is now a good guy.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff that Kian was this religious zealot
yeah.
who didn't question his orders and stuff like that. It's this and finding out that his target is a girl are the two things that turn him into a good guy.
Yeah. So Kian's faith is so deep that it did not survive an encounter with somebody who was carrying a clipboard trying to get people to sign a petition against the Iraq war.
It did not survive a message board post. Like Kian's faith could not log on to twitter.com and last a second.
No.
You know, Kian has seen a video on YouTube.
Oh, yes.
Talks about the masks and how they are not necessary.
Kian saw Plandemic, and it raised some real questions about the motivations of the people who were
Kian believes that the hospitals are just trying to get funding. This is my belief. I respect yours, but Kian is steadfast in his faith.
Jesus Christ.
This is horrible. You know, so April is now breaking Zoe out. Right. And this is like the shitty little adventure game kind of thing. You know, she can't get in the front door. She meets with Crow and you end up sending Crow as this back and forth.
Yeah.
Between Zoe to get to break out. And every single time Crow gets like a one paragraph long little joke monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what birds do. Well, some birds, not all birds. Some of them just fly. I don't really understand what they do. You know, something like that. Just like, hey, do 10 seconds of quick improv mm-hmm. about this subject. Like this doesn't feel written
right
to me.
Whereas like in The Longest Journey, like Crow served as like the fourth wall breaking, like kind of viewpoint character kind of thing. Like we're going to leaven everything that happens. Yeah.
And you're a fish out of water. Like Crow had a little bit of like a mort.
Yeah.
Function, not quite as like masterful or as useful or mm-hmm. complicated, obviously,
but still endearing.
Endearing, and also like this is a little bit of a guide character. Mm-hmm. Like you are a fish out of water. Here's something that can kind of give you a little bit of context, but do it through, you know, this a little bit skewed like humor lens and also mm-hmm. ignorant because a bird kind of thing, because birds right. are smart compared to some animals
mm-hmm.
but not compared to like me, a human.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I eat birds.
Throwing that out there for any birds listening. Yeah, totally. All the time.
I eat birds like 2 out of 5 days. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Especially their thighs. If I can go down on birds in a culinary way. real into chicken thighs lately.
It's awesome. No, that's great. It's really flavorful. No, we talked about this.
Yeah, fuck chicken breast. We'll talk about it again. Yeah. Yeah, fuck a chicken breast. Chicken wing, leg, thigh.
Mm-hmm.
So this is this endless back and forth section.
Yeah. Like you gotta
switching between them.
You gotta melt the bolt. So you Crow relays the information to April, who goes and gets a potion. Then you gotta you gotta knock out one of the guards. So you go and get a sandwich and you get a sleeping potion and stuff like that. Like it's just a bunch of back and forth running as far across the map as you possibly can from, between the different destinations.
Yeah. Crow makes a "that's my final answer" joke about it in 2006, which I feel like it was dated then, but I don't really remember.
In 2006, he probably would have said, "and you are the weakest link." Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that's his final answer. And it's like, God, Crow.
Why are you debasing yourself, Crow?
It's not as bad as the later, therapist, the rapist. Joke that he makes later, which is fucking the tonaliest weird thing, weirdest thing in this this game. They go and they magic won't work in the tower, but they can use potions because that's chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
April goes to Roper Clax to get the potion, the iron melt. Zoe melts the lock, throws the knockout potion, gets out, gets the keys. Can't go downstairs because there's a second guard, but he says he's hungry for a sandwich. Asked to get food ordered, which apparently is an Arcadian thing. You can do DoorDash or whatever, portcullis dash. So you go tell Crow. Crow then goes tells an April. Having this intermediary thing during this whole bit sucks so bad.
Yeah.
You go across town to get the sleeping potion and the sandwich delivered to the prison, and you say to the bureaucrat, I can deliver it myself, as April.
Yeah.
You go up and you knock out the guard.
Yeah.
It takes approximately a million years, but it happens.
Yeah. And then you escape out the kitchen window.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, cut to later. Zoe is furious that April is just kind of washing her hands of the situation. Hey, some really important stuff is happening and you're just kind of over here managing supply lines. How can you not get involved? And then Zoe storms off,
Again, not really understood. I thought April had some angst about being the main character, and she's not washing her hands because the Guardian said this.
Mm-hmm.
She's just washing her hands because of the supply lines.
Right. Yeah. And Crow's hey, you piece of shit, April, why did you refuse to help her? That's not the April that I knew. And then he goes off to be Zoe's sidekick.
Yep. He says, I'll be your sidekick. Zoe's sidekick. Cause now, so Zoe just says the same thing people say to her, but with a question mark.
Yes.
And he's I'm in the Sidekicks Guild, and he compares himself to Samwise Gamgee. Kind of cute.
Yeah.
He says, I know a guy, people with, again, this is just fucking endless. We need somebody with wisdom. Humans are smarter than birds. Birds aren't that smart. And we need somebody with a beard. I don't know if they're smart, but they seem to be smart. I need to find somebody who's a human with a beard. And just fucking John Leguizamo-ing me or something. I did not know. This is really 10-year-old tugging on your leg, telling you about their day.
Yeah.
Kind of feel to it. And there's just no jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to go find Brian Westhouse, because all you Westhouse heads out there are horny for more Brian Westhouse, apparently.
Yeah.
So you go find that guy.
Yeah. And Westhouse is at the South Gate, and he says, okay, well, maybe the White Dragon should be able to help you get back to Stark, because Zoe's tried to go to sleep, but she's not been able to send. My work is done here. This was a fool's errand. I can't get April on my side, but I can't shift. Something is wrong. We need to get to the White Dragon. So we just hop into an airship, and there's probably 40 minutes of talking about yes, the Azadi have, mastered airships. And then Crow's I can't stand flying in a ship, but I can't keep up flying. It's godless, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And now, because you're Zoe instead of April, you have another point of view character to get Brian Westhouse backstory. So you can ask him a lot of the same questions again, just from a different, more Zoe-like perspective.
Yes.
I lost my mind at being sent to the White Dragon for answers again.
Uh-huh. And then you go back to the Shadowman City, and you have to walk through several loading screens just from a different point of the city.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I cannot believe you just have to go back to the same answer oracle again. Mm-hmm. As a different character. So you learn all about Brian Westhouse on this ship.
Yeah.
You know, he crossed the divide in 1933. He's not a shifter.
Yeah.
He's like unstuck in time. You know, and Crow talks about how after April abandoned him, mm-hmm. he went to go find himself. He left his fiance who wanted to have kids
yeah.
in order to do it. And he's like, oh, leaving to find yourself is when you fuck off from all your friends and avoid them.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Like, that's a good joke that he like learned the exact wrong thing to do from somebody who fucked it up. Like,
yeah.
Like there's the potential for that, but it's never really paid off.
The delivery is the problem here. Yeah. And the fact that it's just like, I'm just going around to talk to people because if I don't, the scene won't advance.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And like somewhere around here, like you play it as Kian again and he goes to the journeyman's inn and like gets Na'ane sell out to sell out April going after the scorpion.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah. And, like it's all
in exchange
kind of
for supply lines.
Right.
Like we'll ignore your supply lines if you do this.
Yeah. But but like that is mixed in with this like short non-chapter. That goes on. And Crow just like saying like, yeah, I was a shitty person because the person I was with is a shitty person. And then like Zoe tries to like identify what's going on. Like, hey, you know, like you're just relying on people or whatever. And then Joe says, oh, psychology. You must be a therapist. I found a therapist. He was a big guy with a beard. Maybe he was just the rapist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is the implication here that Crow, the lovable sidekick character, was sexually assaulted by a big guy with a beard after saying people with beards are wise and good?
I think so, maybe, but I don't know that he was. I don't know that he was sexually assaulted. I think that
he just witnessed.
I think that he was just like hey kids, if they don't shout fire, then you've got no obligation. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, kids, the fun comic relief character from the first game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he has witnessed a sex assault and jokes about it. Like, really fucking weird. There's also tons of like
2006 incidental... was a different time, Gary.
Totally different time, man. I've been watching, you know, like, yeah, it's I caution myself from finding encouragement in anything, but I certainly caution myself finding encouragement like, oh, we've come so far.
Mm-hmm.
We have made a little bit of progress.
We've made
like, I'm not saying we've done it. We have mm-hmm. made some, like watching old TV shows, watching old, you know, things like that. Like we've done okay, like a little bit. Like we have so much still to go, but like things did used to be worse.
Yeah. Well, and also like this is in 2006. So this is absolutely after the time Tobias Funke called himself an analropist, right?
Yes. Yeah. Which is also a joke about this, but is a better joke.
Yes. Because it's associated with a character who is oblivious about the things that he says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and. So, yeah, you know, this sucks. Also in Crow's dialogue, there's a lot of weird kind of like horny bits about, you know, kind of something for daddyisms about like, you know, wanting to be around human women.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like Crow anymore.
And that's painful. I loved Crow so much. Go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah.
That was like episode 7 of this show.
Yeah, it's very early on in the show. Yeah. I thought it was earlier than that, actually. Mm-hmm. Crow is no Mort, but he was still good.
Yes.
And now
Crow was Diet Mort, and now Crow is Diet Dr. Mort. Pepper.
Yeah. now he's the Diet Mountain Dew of Mort. Diet Morton Dew. So you follow the path to the corridor to the thoroughfare to get to the library. When they just let you in, to this, the Shadow Men were like, you know, we don't allow people without purpose or whatever. And now they're
but before you were trying to get on their boat to get to their city, like here you're so on this
more
airship.
Protective of the boat.
Yeah, well, but it's like, yeah, we can't get you on the boat. But like if your airship happens to dock at our city, there's nothing really
we can go nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you live here if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And you go and talk to the White Dragon you know, she's like, oh, you're here, but you're not. You know, you're adrift, like you're between these worlds.
Right.
And faith is what you need. And you're like, faith?
Faith?
And now that is the theme. You know, it says that Zoe belongs to the story time, but won't clarify this because she's a, you know, a vague narration character.
She speaks in riddles. And then you know, you have characters in the story who say, oh, I hate it when people speak in riddles. Like, but can I clarify more?
But I do as well as the player.
Yes.
So Zoe can transcend reality by dreaming. To get back to Stark, she has to wake up. So she whispers in Zoe's ear that she needs to go where she is and she'll be free.
Right.
And to get to where she's most needed. And she fades away, leaving Crow behind with Brian Westhouse for their adventures, which take up the next five chapters. I'm just kidding.
No,
I would not have been surprised, but...
Yeah, we're going to chapter 10, Crossroads, which takes place in an unnamed village that is basically just the tree punk zone from Myst.
I don't know where this came from.
Right.
Like this is apparently these are the people that the supply lines are for.
Like the, like this is, you know, like when you go around, you talk to the male rebel.3D model and female rebel.3D model. Like about hopefully the Azadi do not find us. Like this is one of the rebel strongholds. Like this is where the civilians, you know, the women and children live.
Yeah. One of the rebel weak holds. Zoe materializes here in this, on this dock, this village suspended over water. You walk around the gangplanks until you see April in the distance.
Game planks is also accurate because this isn't a game.
Yes. Yes. fakey planks, gang planks. And we cut over to April's perspective when she's talking to the sea captain, who again chews on the fucking scenery.
Yep.
Like this guy is like, "I will, perhaps a rebel like you will."
The sargassum crept up into me throat.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like, you do not have to. Every character does not have to have this much like character to them. Like, you can if this were not voice acted, this would be no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But he plays it super big. April is the Raven and the Scorpion.
Yeah.
And they have some disagreements about taking the fight to the Azadi.
Yeah. Like April wants to go back to Mercuria and assault the tower. And everybody's like, "Hey, that's a really, really bad idea."
Yeah. And this is where the Death Wish starts coming up. Specifically, she says to this woman who's, I guess, also the rebel leader, about how she wants to go rescue Ben Rime.
Right.
Ben Rime was murdered off camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like taken into a tower and probably murdered, probably shows up for a chapter.
Yeah.
And people are like, "No, you can't do that." And she's like, "No, we have to go save our friend." Nothing really comes of this until you go and you talk to Naani, who says like, "Hey, a messenger has arrived."
Yeah.
With word about how we can save Ben Rime. Go to the meeting spot. And April's very shocked, and this is obviously the setup, since Naani has Judas'd the rebel cause.
Right. And she even said, like, later, like, "Oh, you know, may the stars forgive me for what I've done." You know? Like,
yeah.
You know, may God, yeah. So then you cut over to Kian. It's a little bit earlier. Like, the point in time that everything is happening is, like, set during this, like, signal fireworks that happens that all of them see. And like Zoe is just standing there watching all of this happen while all the other stuff goes on. But you play as Kian, and you are in the village. You run across all the stuff. You talk to Nine and he says like, "Yeah, you know, the Scorpion is waiting for it at the pier." And you know, Kian says, "Well, I'll make sure that they go light on you." And Nine is like, "Oh, for what I've done, I'm already dead. She has sold everybody out." And Kian goes up. Talks to April, like, "Oh, are you? Oh, wait, you? I thought the Scorpion was here." Like, "Oh, you're an apostle. You're an apostle." All that, all this mix up. And basically Kian says, "I've had this, you know, crisis of faith. Like, I've never been comfortable with everything, you know, with everything that the six have had us do. You know, I've never been comfortable with what happens on the frontiers. Basically, the emissary is doing way too much. It's, you know, way overboard. I'm not here to kill you. We need to figure out a way to get word back to the capital city to let the six know what's going on, because this is a perversion. Like, you know, I question my faith, but now I'm, you know, my faith is stronger than ever. Like, everybody else is perverting this."
Yes. Which again, very unearned.
Right.
You know, the inertia of this character who has blind faith, who the person he's known his whole life, who tried to talk him out of it, could not do it. But one random encounter on a street.
Yes.
With April does it.
We never get a sense, like when we play as Kian, all we're doing is fighting people. We never get like a look into his inner world.
No. Really.
He never comments or responds to anything.
And in terms of just like general slop. So like, here, the idea here is that Kian, those signals are signals to the Al-Zadi to show up that we've been seeing.
Yeah.
The idea here is that Kian led them here because that other guy, Captain Jerkass, followed him.
Yeah.
This is a weird, this undercuts, you know, what's her head, the Vulcan, mm-hmm. who betrayed, because she really didn't.
Right.
If they trusted Kian, mm-hmm. then nothing bad would have happened. Like, it is, it's a weird house of cards where a lot of bad things had to happen for this to have the tragedy they needed to have happen.
Yes.
You know?
So, like, Kian...
It would have been fine if Kian didn't convert. Mm-hmm. Would have been fine, you yep. know, but they probably got plans for him to become, you know, the new Scorpion or whatever.
Yeah, he takes over the leadership of the Azadi. Like, he becomes their new, like, God Emperor.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Then I don't know. I mean, that's spoilers, but whatever.
Yeah. It's whatever.
Yeah. But, like, Kian had no idea that Vaman was coming along. Like, you know, you have these upstarts yep. in the colonies who are trying to overtake whatever the, you know, central command has. And, you know, that's yep. it's the only reason. Kian did not know he was trailing the killing force that would come in. But, like, by coming here, he has, you know, basically ushered in the doom and demise of all these people who live here in the Rebel Weakhold.
Yes. He says, you know, it's taking him forever to figure out that April is the Scorpion. And
right.
he even says, like, I didn't come here to kill you. I killed the Scorpion. And guileless April in front of a bunch of soldiers who are trying to kill her. And a man mm-hmm. who just said he was sent to kill the Scorpion says,
yep.
Scorpion, that's the name the Azadi gave me.
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with you? What happened to you, April?
The Scorpion, he just rode off on a speedboat over there. You don't know what a speedboat is, but it's fucked up, and you got to go as far away as possible right now.
Yeah, we have them in Stark. Oh, can I distract you a little bit by telling you about Stark? Like, I have a self-preservation instinct, and this plays into her death wish thing that is just, like, just showed up now and is so fucking underdeveloped.
Yeah.
So the soldiers arrest Kian. And kill April. They stab her in the stomach and push her in the water while Zoe watches.
Uh-huh.
Not doing the thing that the ghost child has been telling you to do.
Find April,
the
save April.
The whole game.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was your save April.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if April was going to get saved, getting stabbed in the stomach and thrown to a river would have been the time to do it.
Yeah.
Right?
This ignominious end is probably something Faith didn't want to happen.
You would think.
Yeah.
You know, and it turns out, like, following what Faith wants to do is not actually what we want, but, like, mm-hmm. nobody knows that at this point.
Right.
Because we don't know what Faith is, and it is so sloppy. Like, it is just like, so I don't understand. Do not understand.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe's watching, like, just, oh, she got stabbed. I wonder what's going on with that. And gets pulled into a house by Brian and Chuan. Chuan is the big, you know, the muscle uh-huh. of the rebel group, or Bryn yeah. and Chuan.
Yeah.
And, Chuan is like, no, you have to get out of here. He burns some sleeping powder to send Zoe away before they cut to black and Bryn and Chuan. It sounds like they're killed. We don't actually know what happens to them. I hope Bryn's dead.
Yeah. I am tempted to go look up to look at the wiki and see what happens to see if he pops up
chapters.
Again. Yeah. But Zoe sent away, and then we cut over to the White Dragon at the Shadow Person City. Something attacks her in the library, in the guise of someone that she recognizes. You know, we never see who she looks at. This is presumed to be Brian Westhouse.
Yes,
because he ends up being kind of a greater scope villain because he is carrying the Undreaming.
Ah. So we move on to chapter 11, bankruptcy info tapes. Faith. And, where Zoe wakes up in Damien's apartment. Damien had warned her previously, I might be gone.
Mm-hmm.
When you wake up, you know, like, the voice actor's only getting paid for so much, I'm out. He left a, so this is, again, things that don't make any sense. He left a message on her computer that's like, hey, they found the worm, they're tracking it back, you have to get out of here right away.
Right.
It's a weird thing to leave on, like, a Microsoft Word document on an open monitor with somebody sleeping.
Uh-huh.
You know, get out of here now, whenever you wake up.
Yeah.
You know, like, get out now, but don't wake up. Like, if you're sleeping, you probably need it.
Yeah, like, no hurry or anything.
Yeah, but get out now.
Well, so he tried to wake her up, but she didn't wake up. But, like, it's still just a weird set of circumstances that does not come across kind of in the storytelling.
I also think that they would have a way to wake her up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because, like, he injects her with the Morpheus to get her to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Inject her with the Neo.
Yeah.
Get her to wake up, you know?
Chuan tries to stop him, but there is definitely the sound of clashing steel. Given the overwhelming numbers of the Azadi and Bryn's impetuousness, it is likely that he is dead. Stranger things than his possible survival have happened, however. Bryn is voiced by Matthew Keenan.
Oh, good to know.
And then in Dreamfall Chapters, Bryn's silhouette and attire are rather clearly visible during the opening scene of Dreamfall Chapters Book 1. It is likely that he has survived.
Thank God.
Oof, I was really worried.
As a Bryniac, I gotta get more Bryn. Fuck. It's all. So they found the worm. We have to go to the worm gathered some coordinates, though, in St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
Which is the first intrusion in the dream net occurred. Mm-hmm. So we have to go there. You also have a message from your dad that's like super worried
because
you haven't gotten back to her in days. You call back and lie. Like, you leave a message, say everything's normal. I've just been lazing around the house.
Yeah. Gary, I didn't expect like the final puzzle dungeon of this to be an empty factory where you just have to kind of like do something with a crane.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. It's like, oh yeah, we haven't had mechanics in a while. Let's hurry up and do it.
Yeah, but let's do it in a way that makes you run across this factory five times more than it's necessary.
Yeah, big empty factory.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is super obnoxious. Really hard for me to pay attention at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the bad will or all the goodwill I have has burned away.
Yeah.
For this game. Like, and it sucks because there are things that happen later that I think I would like, you know, but I'm so cranky.
Yeah.
At this point, like in my play experience.
Yeah.
I'm like filled with crankicules.
I mean, like, so we're reaching like the, you know, okay, so the death of April is definitely a climax, but like we're finding answers, right? We are getting, you know, like this is our final lead. We're going to figure out what is causing the static. The static is related to these messages that you've received. Like, and Zoe's plotline is really kind of the only one that I've cared about on balance throughout this entire thing, though she did take like four chapters off.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but you like you get here and just like you're outside this factory and you're doing kind of it's basically the same puzzle that you did to get into the basement of the of the hospital, you know, except you get to do the lock picking puzzle again, you know, like moving the symbols around like, hey, remember that?
Yep. And this one, instead of pushing a dumpster, you turn on a car.
Right. You hack a car
by hacking it for it to move. Just like super just I don't know. And when you say like we're entering into the part with answers and stuff,
but this isn't really
gonna end on a huge cliffhanger.
We're entering to the part where answers are promised but not delivered.
Yeah, we're entering into the bill of goods. You know, we're entering into the stocks and options we got that represents
right
answers. So you go there, you move the car, so you can climb on the fire escape to the roof where you push down a neon letter to break a skylight, etc. Get down to the production floor, and there's an insertion. Like, this is all just, you know, bad longest journey, moving stuff around factory stuff. You know, maneuver a crane around, etc., etc. Eventually get into a lab.
Yeah.
And we get in the lab, we are on to cliche number like a million of this, you know, like Rapture, you know, like, oh, the lab is actually a young girl's bedroom.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, yeah. And like, I don't know, like, this is a cliche that I can get down with. Like, I was cool with this at the beginning of Prey, right?
Sure.
You know, like you get in and it's like it's a combination young girl's bedroom. That's also a hospital room. And like the lab is observing through one way glass. So when you're inside the lab, nothing looks, you know, nothing looks suspicious. Right.
Yes.
And you go in and there is a there's a dollhouse in there that looks very similar to the one that you've seen in the winter. There's a drawing that looks like almost exactly like the winter area that you've seen with the cabin in the woods. Floating in the void. Yep. But inside the dollhouse, you open it up and there's a data cube, which you can take out and put in. And you get this, you know, quite lengthy exposition, this log that was created by a Jiva, by a Jiva researcher talking about the experiments that they've been running on this young girl named Faith. Remember, Jiva is the company that Chang worked for. Like, it's where you went to get the package for Reza at the very beginning of the game.
And think about as a thought experiment. Think about how that would have landed narratively if we didn't do any Arcadia shit.
Yes.
Like, if we went to Wadi, investigated it, then went here.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I remember that because it was only a chapter ago.
Right.
You know, like, or two chapters ago. Like, this, again, this, like, focusing on all these different storylines just absolutely fucking murders.
I didn't spend any time in an underground city with goblin people who never, like, I don't know what they want or what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And I get that the longest journey's gimmick is that it's world hopping, right? Like, that is what differentiates this property. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a story, like, it just absolutely kills, like, any kind of sense of connection to the questions when we find the answers.
It just kind of seems like your responsibility, if you're going to include, you know, if your story is going to be built around world hopping, you should probably put interesting stuff in both worlds.
Yeah. And not just one of them.
Right.
You know? We get the data cube. We learn about the way they're experimenting on this girl, Faith, is giving her massive quantities and changing these formulations on the Morpheus drug.
Right.
This is how they... the sleep drug you need.
They're developing the dreamer. Yeah,
the dreamer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, at a certain point, like, as they are, you know, as the researcher is working and recording her log, the terminal turns entirely to static. This happens right as Faith flatlines. Again, this young girl who has been appearing to us in Ringu messages the entire time around. This is the point where she dies and her consciousness uploads into the DreamNet, and this is what is causing the static. This is the mm-hmm. you know, insertion that happened. She is the malware, the ghost that lives in the machine, and they make very, very certain that they say ghost in the machine several times.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
we gotta know,
right?
So, you know, this is kind of like a whistleblowing data cube.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing really to do now except to leave.
Yeah.
And we go home. we go back to, oh, we figured that out. I just wanted to know the answer. I didn't want to do anything about it.
No. Stop Wadi? What? No.
Yeah,
come on.
Oh, yeah, no.
You're big. Like, can't fight City Hall, man.
No, I'm not going to do anything with this data cube.
But nothing hurts now. That didn't hurt before. So I won't pretend.
So you go back to Casablanca, go into your house, your phone rings and it's your dad. He calls your bluff. Like, he found out that you weren't home because he checked in with Wonkers,
mm-hmm.
Which now is like, I fully don't want it, Wonkers.
No, Wonkers is a fucking snitch, man.
Wonkers is absolute snitch. Snitches for ex-boyfriends. Like, if you want the men in your life to have constant surveillance on you, get a Wonkers.
Yeah.
Wonkers is the ultimate bros before hoes, like... device.
Wonkers the ultimate cop.
Yeah, you heard a shelf on the elf on the shelf. Now there's gigantic purple ape by the drapes.
Jesus. And then Zoe, exhausted from traveling between worlds and traveling all the way around our world, all the way around Earth, she collapses onto her bed as a similar to Coldplay, yet legally distinct from Coldplay song, plays. Yep. With a chorus of Nothing Hurts Now.
Ah, yes. Wonkers attempts to comfort you.
Mm-hmm.
And as he does so, he eventually says there's a visitor. I was like, oh, and that's pretty weird.
Yeah.
And it turns out this is Chang, who walks in from the balcony.
Yep.
Wonkers also lets people into your house. They said they knew you. And Chang is really bizarrely sinister.
Yeah.
During this whole thing. Like, this is a very aggressive, bit, because she's a villain here.
Yeah.
She's using you to an end. She says Faith was Jeeva's experiment, but it was Wadi and Pete's who took her away and ran the Morpheus experiments.
Pete's, so a.k.a. both, Mojo. Yeah,
Pete's Mojo. Chang wants to stop Wadi from releasing the Dreamer and stop the static because it'll make another collapse.
Right.
She's like, I want to help Faith. You have to convince her to let go.
Right.
Like, and again, you have this like cadence of a recurring theme of letting go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, but I do not feel like it is well supported. She's like, I've been observing you. I know everything that happened and I've been helping you.
Mm-hmm.
Go into the DreamNet. I'll send you to Faith. You convince her to stop dreaming, and this will end the static and free
right.
her.
You know, and if that's not enough for you, you know, convincing Faith to leave will enable the downfall of Wadi because their technology is going to stop working.
It's everything you want.
Right.
So we go into our last chapter, The Longest Journey, where you're in that winter area. It feels a little bit different. You mm-hmm. go into the house. Which opens like splitting itself up, which looks cool.
Yep. It's a big dollhouse and you go inside and Faith is playing with the dollhouse inside. I'm down with that kind of recursion. It's good.
Yeah. But again, I've lost all my goodwill.
Yes. Yeah.
Here, you know, and, she says the white lady told me to help Zoe.
Mm-hmm.
So And then the Dreamfall Wiki
says the White Lady is not the White Dragon. It is somebody different. Oh. It is a different cosmic force.
I hate that. I was convinced that it was the fucking dragon.
Yep.
And I still didn't make sense for motivations.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like, oh, the White Lady told me to help Zoe, and that the White Lady said that Zoe saved April. Mm-hmm. There's like one thing that Zoe did, and it was definitively not saved
yeah,
April.
Zoe just watched. Zoe might as well pop some popcorn.
Zoe, the way that Zoe saved April was to go up and be like, hey, do you want to get involved in an adventure?
Uh-huh.
No? Okay. Do you want to get involved in adventure? No? Well, fuck you. I'll watch you die. And that's how she helped her.
Right.
It is so confused and so sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Do you want me to string this out? Do you want me to say?
Yeah, do it. Do the thing, man. I'm never going to play that fucking game.
I don't know that I'm going to play it, but I just from reading the wiki, Zoe instigates April's death. What April wanted was death to be reincarnated as a being called Saga.
Ah, yes. She needed to become Saga.
Yes.
So it relies on me believing the death wish.
Yes.
Character strand that characters say, but do not exhibit.
Right. So,
and she helped her die by
what exactly? by getting her into the situation.
Yeah, kinda. She could have been in that like that rebel area regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what she does, is goes and guards supply lines.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that Zoe had anything to do with that really.
Yeah,
it seemed like a key in April.
It's like the stand. Hey, Stu, you had to go observe it and bring the news back.
Oh, it's okay. The Schrodinger thing. I got you. Yeah. What kind of visual novel nonsense is this fucking shit?
No, the stand is a Stephen King.
Somebody explain that to me.
Book. It's a
no. I know. I know. Okay. I just am mad because Schrodinger's cat was going to get explained to again.
No, it's part of a prophecy. It's good. Yeah, don't worry.
The Wikipedia that is the Wikipedia entry that supports the visual novel industry. like between this and Zeno's Paradox, we got an entire genre figured out.
You got yourself a stew going, baby.
So this now Zoe now acts like a totally different character,
right?
Who now not only like acts like a different character, but has a greater understanding of the cosmology of this world than is earned.
Yeah, no. So she is trapped in this land of eternal winter and static, and she is just fine being here. She has, you know, compassion for Faith, which is not, you know, out of line for Zoe, but she is entirely on board with what Faith is saying, which is, you know, hey, Zoe, you like me, you are like me. We are both dreamers. Both of us dream things true.
Yes.
You know,
and you're my sister. And yes. I mean that literally. We have the same mother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Do you want me to string this out too?
Sure.
The same mother is also the same mother that April has, the original White Dragon.
Punch.
What? What?
That was me punching my wall.
Okay.
But I didn't want to actually punch my wall.
All right. Okay.
Just cranky about it. So Zoe, who now is like this weird Mother Teresa-like mm-hmm. character, is like, you know, Faith is like, I don't want to leave because I don't know where I'll go.
Right.
And I'll be alone. And Zoe says, I'll stay with you until you go. I don't know if this is worth it, but for me, I believe there's something in the afterworld. I have faith. You know, you just have to have faith.
Yeah.
Now, at what point was Zoe, the character, other than having faith that her friend Reza was not dead,
mm-hmm.
exhibiting faith in this triad whatsoever?
I mean, she stepped into this new world and people explained stuff to her that maybe ended up being true.
Yes, but this is explicitly about an afterlife.
Yeah.
She's talking about like the next world and stuff. Uh-huh. And there has not been a lot of religiosity in this.
No.
Up until this point.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's the fact that she doesn't know, but she is certain that Faith can go. But like, she's kind of got her own reasons for sending Faith away. Like,
yeah,
you're going
to kill a lot of people if you don't figure out what's on the other side.
And
of the
also, we need this corporation to go away like really badly. So if you can just kind of like fuck on off out of this network, please.
Yep. Get the hell out of here. Because if you don't, a lot of people are dead. Also, though, I'm pretty sure it's going to end up great for you.
Yeah, no, you're gonna be good. It's not like there's gonna be an eternal silence.
Or hell.
Oh, okay.
You know, given that you're responsible for many deaths.
Yeah.
Via the static. Remember that traffic accident? I do.
Yeah.
Like his name was, you know,
his name was Gary.
Yeah, here are all the people who died in that traffic accident you called while giving me vague information that was not useful.
Yeah.
So you lay down
mm-hmm.
next to Faith, and she drifts off and disappears.
Right.
We cut over to Pete's mojo mm-hmm. in his greenhouse. He's talking to somebody named Sam, and he's like, oh, my senses are gone.
Yeah.
Like, they took this away from me.
He's disconnected from the net.
Yep. Yep. And the people who did this.
And Sam is the CEO.
Yes. Yep. As the twins appear to kill him, appear and kill him mm-hmm. as the CEO watches on. So the CEO cut off the original owner, is taking a hostile takeover of this corporation, which I'm sure mm-hmm. is Chapter's shit.
And then we cut it back to Casablanca. Chang yep. is standing over a sleeping Zoe, who is having the dick sucked off of her face by the dreamer Lotus, and says, hey, I can't allow you to wake up, but yep. I can dose you with enough Morpheus to keep you down forever. And says outright that Zoe is her biological daughter.
Yep. It's a shame, since mm-hmm. you're my daughter.
Yes. You have so much of your father in you. Ba-ba-ba. No.
Yeah, fucking A.
And this is why Zoe is $1 million babied.
Yes, she's $1 million baby. we go to Dreamfall, the chapter, the epilogue, Dreamfall, where Zoe's narrating that scene on the tropical beach from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Says, you know, the bad guys won. The dreamer could be released. The future is out of my hands and it's in yours.
Right. Whoever she is addressing this to. Yeah.
Yep. We cut over to her in the hospital room where her dad is watching over her, and Reza pops in and talks to Zoe's father.
Yeah.
Zoe appears as a force ghost and says, careful, Dad, that's not him. And she can't talk to her dad. She's just a force ghost.
Yeah.
She says goodbye to herself.
She waves bye-bye to her body.
Yep, like that Mr. Show sketch, like, uh-huh. see you in heaven, me. and she materializes in the story time.
Yes, that place from the beginning where Brian Westhouse went to and was taken over by the Undreaming.
Yeah.
You know, and speaks to the vagabond, right? And mm-hmm. This says, like, hey, welcome here. You are special. You are a dreamer. You are one of these people who can make reality. You control this thing that is even above the balance. And the vagabond says, you know, the universe is like a very thick book filled with countless stories. So all of this has been about the potence and creative power of stories and film. And we make the universe as we write it, and we write it as we make it. And says, hey, Zoe is here to tell you a story, something that will help because the undreaming is unchained. And he says this a couple of times as though it is a statement of profound and terrifying truth. And then Zoe begins telling the story like at the beginning of the game. I have no idea where the loop begins or where the loop ends. I mm-hmm. thought that she was saying, yeah.
very frustrating. We switched to 3 months later in the real world. There's a newscast about Wadi releasing the Dream Time. And it's a modern technology. You gotta love it. You just gotta mm-hmm. love it.
Oh yeah. You gotta love it, Diane. Yeah, that's right, Diane.
The little media criticism, one of the important themes.
Mm-hmm.
And a storm whips around that tower, the evil tower of Mercuria.
Mercuria, that place we haven't been for 5 chapters that we were told to really care about for a long time.
Yeah. 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 That we were in for 5 chapters when we were told to care about the other, mm-hmm. about Stark. Fade to credits. There's a post credit scene. We're back in Tibet, 1993. Brian Westhouse, or 1933. Mm-hmm. Brian Westhouse collapses on this mountainside, and a man named Chavez appears to him and says, time is a circle. It will not end here. You are needed.
Yes. And Chavez, I don't know why they give him a different name. This is Cortez, the wise man who appears and basically informs April that she is a shifter.
They also forgot.
Right. Yeah,
like, somebody's not reading their source book. We can use.
Yeah. And like the 3D model for Cortez just makes him look like a Native American G-Man.
Yeah. And yeah. Like the Native American G-Man from Wayne's World 2.
and that's where this ends, and I am so fucking infuriated just at the general concept of writing a story, and like what the story is just a way for you to get to tell more stories.
I am so 1000% done with the theme being stories are important.
Yep.
Like I like there are themes that stand up to reuse,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I get a real theme fatigue from, you know, it's, I joke about the power of friendship theme as being obnoxious, right?
Yeah.
And I mean that. And the reason why I think it's obnoxious is because I don't feel like there's a lot new to say.
Well, and also like, when that is deployed, it is almost always in a story where it's just people who were near each other and did things together, but they're like, it was never talked about their actual friendship or relationship.
The friendship is not very lived in, you know, and the theme that like what we have is stories, the power of stories is something I find immensely unsatisfying. And also is like not even an 11th hour, like an 11th hour and 59th minute.
Yeah.
Theme introduced to this. And I just, I hate this game and I'm very frustrated by how amateurish this writing is and how just like this needed more, like all of these things are things that if you wrote this as a novel, any editor or feedback you got would be, hey, like scrap large swaths of this, like this is not, this is not ready for prime time, you know? And it just, it doesn't feel like it ever got that pass.
Right.
So it is, like, in terms of like story construction and dialogue and like plot and theme, this to me felt shockingly amateurish and not just like on the video game curve, you know, just in general.
Yeah.
Like, woof.
Yeah. You know, and I've got a little bit more tolerance for those, you know, like, hey, story is a way to arrange the universe. Kind of a good kind of conceit, just because I like the Dark Tower, and I think that it's done very well there. Here, it is not earned. It is literally just brought in as like something else that is above dreams. So like here, okay, the balance is important. It is Stark and Arcadia standing athwart each other. And then we learn, oh, there's something above that. It is dreams. And then above dreams is stories. Like it is literally just, you know, the malediction prophecy putting in new reveals for ways to order the universe where we can like, we can just
vague
like
increasingly less defined
right,
dreams,
you know, we can one up ourselves by just saying there is a greater force than this and there are people who are special because they are tapped into it, and boom, you're in the story. Here the story can help, and like you know, like how many afterlives can there be? How like how many ways to organize the universe can there be? Like you have just cashed in way too many cliche coupons for this to have any resonance or for this to land. There is nothing human about this. It is just an exercise in genre excess. And I'm someone who has a lot of patience for genre fiction. Like it's fine. It serves a purpose to be there.
Yeah, this isn't just like it's specific genre excess. It's not just like the fun way of genre excess. It's not the, you know, John Wick genre excess.
Yeah. No.
Like, and there's something like introducing
genre
that story.
Indulgence.
Like introducing that story is the thing in the universe this late has the mild upside of it not having the weird self-congratulatory nature that a lot of those stories like they have with me. And I'm not talking about the Dark, I haven't read the Dark Tower.
No, no. I would not have read that as an attack on me. Don't worry, man.
With like the, a lot of times when people are like, oh, it's really just about stories. I'm like, well, you're telling me a story. This really feels like you patting yourself on the back.
You know, the filmmaker is God.
I am creating worlds, universes. Like, I think that comes off a little Garth Marenghi. When you do this as a theme. I have absolutely no faith based on this game that Chapters does not lean into that really hard.
Yes.
And that is, you know, that's a poison trope to me, or that's a poison aspect of that trope.
Yeah. And don't worry. Everything that I've read alludes to them just abandoning that and adopting another model to arrange everything that ultimately.
I just
framing device upon framing device.
Like the problems in this game, like, are so weirdly multifaceted that almost everything I can say about it, the opposite is also true in a way that's really damning. So I'm like, the scope of this game is too wide. And that's true. Yes. Like, the game spends way too much time talking about, in an abstract, like, the higher orders of reality. Like, you know, balance at least means something. You know, I can understand what balance is. The first game explored that. Dreams, though, are invoked as kind of like a totemic abstraction in this. Like, you know, you dream to travel back and forth. You can have dreams that go that come true, but the act of dreaming is something that happens with plot mechanics and not really themes.
Right.
Like it's important part of like the Wadi conspiracy. It's not really that meaning to humanity or what that means for us as people is not really explained.
Yeah.
And then moving on to stories, also not particularly explained. So the big themes in this, is the scope is too wide. scope. Is too wide. It's also too narrow.
Yeah.
Where like we don't get a resolution to a lot of these stories.
Right.
The detail we get is superfluous a lot of the time. Like we end up spending a lot of time on things that are literal waste of time that would be telling us about the world and what this means to humanity, but don't tie into the themes.
Yeah.
Like the oppressed people of Arcadia are not tied into any of those themes. You know, so it's like everything that you can say that's bad about this, it also engages in the worst version of it, the opposite thing.
Yeah. So you can't even say they should have gone in another direction because they already did, and they did it poorly. Yeah.
It's just really like shockingly incompetent. Like narratively, like as a piece of software, it runs okay. Like it's not incompetent, like, you know, like over the road, you know, rig truckers or whatever. But it is just narratively like huge. Like it's been a while since I've had this David Cage feeling of being mad at how somebody likes to express narrative.
Yeah.
But this made me mad about how this expresses narrative. And it's just shockingly amateur.
Yeah.
Like really amateur. And I know that that's not like something you deploy like a lot, like game making games is hard, writing is hard.
Yeah, there were a lot of people involved in this, but like there are also like any one of them could have stopped this. Any one of them could have said, hey, this doesn't add up. Like, but no, like this was created with enthusiasm and buy-in.
Well, and I also, this is like the dark side of our tour stuff. Like Tornquist has his name all over the shit. You know, that is the person who is going to get most of the blame for me for not, you know, running this by a buddy and being like, hey, does this make sense? Like after you read this, this summary, like, what would you say the theme is?
Yeah.
Like what is coming across in this character dialogue?
Yeah.
You know, real basic creative writing shit. And I always get frustrated when writers don't do that. I know games are a different medium and it's more complicated than that, but it's still, there are games that accomplish it. You know, like you're talking about Mort, that game's thematically whole. It sticks to one theme. During Torment, it's a longer game with way more dialogue, way more writing. It sticks to one theme and explores the fuck out of it.
Yep.
This is like this shitty buffet of themes that you can take a little nibble out of a bunch of them, but never fully explore or comment on any of them, and then go home and get Golden Corral diarrhea because you were at a buffet and you shouldn't go to buffets because they're fucking poison.
Yeah. It's Homer in the Land of Chocolate. And he's going around nibbling on everything, but then he goes up to the store window and looks in, and instead of being like, ooh, chocolate half off, it's like, ooh, stealth and combat half off. And then he wakes up.
No longer in the dream time. Anywho, I hated this. No offense to you know, the person who requested it.
Yeah, sure, to Jonathan. Thank you very much for supporting us. Like I went into it wanting to go to bat, but I just can't.
Yeah. I wanted to like this. I came into an open mind. I think the beginning is good. I had a lot of fun with this episode. So we got fun content out of it, but as always, not a personal attack on people who like it. If you have things to say about Dreamfall, hit us up at duckfeed.tv/contact by the 15th of June.
So you can say things about Dreamfall, or you can write in other responses about Crash Bandicoot 2, The Wrath of Cortex, or Castlevania, The Order of Ecclesia.
Yep, the bright spot this month for me. I beat that game and I love it.
That's good.
It's also, if you have things to say about next month's games, you can write in by July 15th.
Yeah.
And those games are Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together, Hitman 2, the reboot of Hitman, the sequel to the reboot of Hitman, and Mario Golf Advanced Tour, which I've been playing.
Yeah.
And it holds up really well.
Yeah,
it was fun as shit.
The golf games are fun. Like they're good games.
Nice on birdie putt. That game is very fun.
So both Order of Ecclesia and the Mario Golf Advanced Tour, those are going to be the premium episodes. If you're listening to this and you do not have the ability to access those, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and back us currently at $5 a month and get not just those premium episodes but all of them. Some really good stuff in that deck if you decide to draw from it.
In addition to bonus shows, Unfilmable and Bonfireside Chat, that you get for that. At $10 a month, you get a bunch of old Abject Sufferings and premium shows. And you also get the joy of supporting your boys. We understand money is tough, but if you like the show and you're able to give us $1.25 per week to help us keep doing it, we really appreciate it.
And we cannot thank the people who have given to us enough. especially during these just really dog shit times.
Absolutely dog shit times. When dog shit times began and we made the decision not to do live appearances this year, we talked about Virtual Duck Fest. That is happening. It is not scheduled yet, but we have started the early planning. It will either be next month in June, or this month as you're hearing this, it'll either be June or July. But we have some pokers in the fire for that, and that's going to be a real blast. Stay tuned for information as to how to tune in for that weekend event of goofs and spoofs.
It'll be a good time.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and then rating reviews on Apple Podcasts are appreciated.
Please.
What should they watch out for, Cole?
They should watch out for a lack of focus.
Yeah,
they should watch out for me. I really need to use the restroom, actually, like, quite badly.
Coming through.
What?
That's my you having to go rush to the restroom voice.
Oh,
hot
okay.
soup.
I got a bladder full
Attica.
Of hot piss. I got a bladder full of hot
Attica,
piss. It's coming.
Attica. Attica, hot soup.
No, I've had to go basically since we were talking about Helena Chang stuff.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah, no, it's a fucking nightmare, actually. I didn't want to stop us because I didn't want to kill the rhythm. But Gary, can we sign off?
Sure.
Good night.
Enjoy the dreaming. Good night.